Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, it's amazing. The days are so different here. It's like doing almost like a different radio show. And so we had some big change yesterday. And so we're going to get Jonathan Mosley, our legal report, back on Monday. We're going to get Cindy Cagle, our medical freedom report, back on Monday, both of whom were kind of unceremoniously bumped when we got the world's greatest doctor panel on Thursday. And so that's a big change. And so today we've just – today is all guests, or all reporters, actually. We've got we got Paige Ward, who's going to be in the third hour. We seem to be doing a lot of stuff. Seems to be doing a lot of stuff with wellness now. And this is kind of intriguing. It's sort of my new thing that I don't know a lot about. And so Paige Ward is she calls herself the Awakening Oracle. So, of course, we have to find out about that. But we're going to combine wellness, yoga, spirituality, psychic stuff, massage, just a bunch of beliefs. And it's interesting. It's like a mind-body connection. So that's going to be fascinating to explore. Immediately before that, in the second hour, you know, we're going to be talking nuclear war, death, destruction, and hopefully avoiding all those things with Dr. Peter Pry. So we're a day of contrasts. We're having a great time exploring all the different things we explore. And that's why I spent a bit of time yesterday on the futility of the Ukrainian war, something that could have been solved rather easily by negotiating the 6 points that Putin put forward, which were not perfect. Russia would give some and Ukraine would give some, and together they'd this sort of reach a mutual agreement and avoid a war. Well, that didn't happen. I think at the urging of the United States and Western Europe and NATO, the people that really want a war, well, they got one. And now what are you going to do with it? And so that's something we need to discuss, as well as different weapon systems and things like that for whatever's happening, you know, upcoming with Russia and China. In the first hour, we've got Christian Frenette, who's going to join us here in just a little bit, as soon as he calls in. And this is Shelby's son. And so our cruise and travel person is cruising and traveling. And I think a lot of it has to do with the Love Boat reality show. So we're all hoping that Shelby gets to be a Julie cruise director, because Shelby is in real life a cruise director. I mean, that's what she did for years and years, and now has a travel business and is now our reporter here and does a bunch of other things, social media guru and everything else, and spends a little bit of time with us each week, which is great. And so, and after that, we have Josie Cossie with the Latino Report, and we'll see what's going on with all the various controversies and things that are happening. She knows something about Ukraine, also south of the border itself, and everything that's happening there. So it's a busy time all over here at Action Radio and for all the different reports that we have. And there's something going on, though. There's something that's kind of like a theory I've been formulating the last been coming for a while. I've noticed there's a difference in the doctors that we talk to, the ones that are pro-early treatment, that don't toe the government line, that don't have the sort of blind allegiance to the remdesivir ventilator death march that so many doctors seem to be doing. They don't do that. And what seems to separate the doctors that I talk to and the wellness people and everybody else from the government doctors is a belief in God. And it seems to be a very interesting theme. And a couple things have happened. One of them is that one of these doctors, Carrie Medej, I guess it's pronounced Medej, just had a horrible airplane accident and is in intensive care, and she should be fine. It's going to take months, but it's just fascinating that she is one of the practitioners of health who's against the COVID jab and a bunch of other things. And it's just interesting that there's a lot of doctors that have problems with small airplanes, but that's another story. I used to teach flying. But it's just interesting that the amount of doctors on the side of you making your own choice are the ones that have God, and the ones that don't, that are like the government doctors that sort of worship the government altar, will do what they're told. They'll march in lockstep and they'll just follow orders. It's really fascinating how that's working out. All right, let's bring on a Christian here. In fact, I think what I'll probably do is play Shelby's theme, simply because I don't have a theme for Christian yet. But if he keeps showing up here, I'm going to give him his own theme too.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Frenette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories.
Yeah, man.
Here we go.
Oh, we don't have Shelby. We have Son of Shelby. We have Christian. Or Chris, and I can't figure out which. I kind of like Christian. It seems to have more authority to it. But anyway, that is the be that as it may. Good morning, sir. How you doing? Welcome back to Action Radio.
Good morning, Greg.
All right. So we have, I don't know if you've been following the show lately, we've got a ton of controversies that have been happening here. And I want to get to what you want to talk about. But just to let you and everybody else know, if you want to join our listen to our Thursday panel. Well, you might be able to join it too. Our Thursday panel. We have some of the world's greatest doctors, Mikovits, Artis, Thorpe, Marble, and our data expert, John Cullen, discussing things that you literally are not going to find anywhere else in the news. So we're breaking new ground here all the time. And so things are pretty fascinating what's happening here, especially with citizen legislation. So if you have a teenage bill, something that affects younger folks that you think should be put into to operation here, let me know. So what's in your mind? What are we talking about this morning?
So this morning, since yesterday we talked about America's other neighbor, Canada, we'll be talking about Mexico today.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes, specifically the Mexican-American War.
1846? Or was it later? Spanish-American War was 1890. Was Mexican War 1846? I'm just guessing. I used to be a tour guide.
It was 1846.
Ha, ha, ha. So I used to be a tour guide in San Francisco, so I know a little bit about it, because we have a Fort Winfield Scott, and I believe General Winfield Scott was in that war. And, of course, there was the garrison in San Francisco, the Mexican garrison that was attacked, and I think that's what started the war. You can tell me for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. So I remember a little bit about this. This is going to be interesting to see what I don't know, so I'm kind of curious. Okay, so why did we fight that war? How did it start? What was it for? Tell me the details.
All right, so let's get to the backstory for the war.
Mm-hmm.
So Texas had just gained its independence from Mexico.
Okay.
And it wasn't as big as the Texas we know today. It was a lot smaller.
Oh, so what was the rest of it then? How much, what part of current Texas
so
was Texas then?
Mm-hmm. When they originally gained independence, they were like a small blob of what they used to be. So, like, they basically didn't have anything above their, like, main chunk. Like, I don't really know how to describe it, but it was like a little blob along
the top half of Texas today wasn't there. That's what you're saying, right? So the bottom
half
was and the top half wasn't?
Yeah, basically.
So I guess the rest of it was open territory, or what was it then? You got me curious.
It was Mexican. It was Mexican territory. And, Texas got more land from Mexico because they fought over it, and they ended up being bigger than what modern-day Texas is when they finally, like, broke free.
Wait a minute. This is interesting. Okay, so I'm trying to visualize this. So Texas became an independent country, I guess, because it wasn't part of the United States yet. It was Mexican territory
Correct.
Above it, so it probably was Mexican territory around it because that wasn't U.S. Well, some of that was territory. I mean, how far did the states extend in 1846? Did it come right up to Texas?
So the states kind of – okay, so the states had, like – they were Oregon. It was, like, Oregon, and then it went around Texas –
okay. Well, we had the Louisiana Purchase, right? I mean, had that been done?
Yes.
I think it had been.
Yeah, it had been.
So,
it had been.
So that was U.S. territory. And so then we still had some Mexican territory. Then we had Texas, the smaller portion. Okay, I'm just trying to get a picture of this. This is fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we went around Texas, or we went around the modern-day Texas borders.
Okay.
The Mexican Empire at the time was really big. It was one of the biggest countries on the planet.
Hmm.
It went all the way down to Panama, and it went all the way up to Washington State.
Oh.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
Okay. What were they doing with all that land? Was it were there cities? Were there Mexican cities? Was it populated? And why did we want it? You know, I guess to get back to our original question, why did we have a Mexican-American War? What did they have that we wanted, or what did we have that they wanted, and how did this whole thing get going anyway?
quite frankly, land.
Huh.
That's an often used reason for war.
Yeah. Okay.
America was still going through the manifest destiny stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're trying to get as much of North America as they possibly could. That's why they expanded so far and everything.
Was it the Monroe Doctrine, manifest destiny, if I remember my history?
Yeah, kind of. The Monroe Doctrine just kind of said that Europeans don't belong in North or South America.
Hmm. So that was our sphere of influence. If I remember, I want to get the record correct, because, you know, like most people, I have like patches of history, and I kind of like to connect the dots. So Monroe, who was president of the United States, said that, I guess, the East and the West, the oceans, the Pacific and the Atlantic, and everything in between, that's kind of like us. That's our sphere of influence. We are there. So I guess Europe stay out. That was the idea?
Yeah, kind of. And they used basically, they didn't like colonialism in their continent.
Well, that makes sense, considering we became a country by fighting off a colonial power, you know, Britain. So that actually makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
Really, the whole thing that sparked the Mexican-American War was Texas really wanted to join America.
Okay.
And at first, America said no, because they didn't want another slave state, because that whole thing was going on. But later, like a few, I think it was like a year later,
mm-hmm.
or a couple months later, Texas asked again when they were bigger, and America said yes. And Mexico still claimed Texas as their land. They didn't acknowledge Texas's independence. They still saw it as a part of the Mexican Empire. Mexico told them so. They said, give us back Texas, or we'll take it back. And America didn't like that very much, so they put troops along the Rio Grande. And the Mexicans, kind of trying to fire like a warning shot of like, bippity-boppity, get off my property, they had a battle. I think it was the Battle of Santa Ana that kind of started everything.
And well, he was the general, though, for the Alamo. So Santa Ana was, what was the Alamo was 1836, if I remember. I'm just, like I said, I'm just pulling numbers out of my head.
Sorry, what was 1846?
1836 was the Alamo. And the general that we were fighting, that Texas was fighting, was General Santa Ana. Right.
Oh, I thought it was named after the city. I thought it was named after the city of.
Well, he was a general. He was the one that we opposed. Sam Houston, you know, eventually captured him as he tried to escape. So the Alamo gave time for the other troops to show up, our folks. Yeah, like I say, I'm a little fuzzy on this part of history. That's why I'm asking the question. So if you don't know, it's okay. Trust me. There's a lot of things I don't know. I'm trying to put it together. So Texas, I don't think they became independent. Oh, they were independent sometime after the Alamo, Texas became an independent state or independent country, I guess, right? And so Mexico wanted it back.
Republic of Texas,
okay. So Mexico wanted it back. The United States didn't want it because it was going to be a slave state. And so then, but the United States didn't want Mexico to have it either, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Because they wanted more land for themselves.
Interesting. So then what happened?
So then America with, I think Polk was the president at the time, signed a declaration of war to Mexico. And funnily enough, Mexico never signed a declaration of war towards America.
Hmm. Now, can you see this? I mean, or have you looked in the archives? You know, up until World War II, we used to have declarations of war. That's one of the biggest problems with Congress and the military and the presidency now, is that we go fight in places where we haven't had a declaration of war since World War II. It's the last one that I know of. So the way it's supposed to work, Congress declares war, and the president then becomes commander-in-chief. And we'll talk about that sometime, too. But you can still see this, can't you? Have you looked at the declaration of war that I guess Congress passed and Polk signed? I'm just curious.
I'm not.
Okay, might be interesting. Might be interesting to take a look at it. Sometimes the actual documents are fascinating. Did it have any limitations? Did it have any, you know, was it specific for what purpose was it? You know, when I don't know how declarations of war work. I'm kind of curious myself now. That's why I find be interesting. Let's take a look now. Let me look it up right now while you're chatting.
So declarations of war typically have a casus belli.
What's that mean?
Which is like the reason. It's like the reason for war. So like, let's take an example. How can I think of an example that's not going to get me canceled on Twitter?
Okay. Yes, you have to couch your words. I don't. So if I, you know, we'll talk off the air about what I can't say. That'll get you in trouble. But yeah. I think we're okay.
All right.
We're just talking history here. Yeah. I'm not on Twitter that much, so I don't care.
Okay, let's think of the Soviet Union declaring war on Romania.
Okay.
In World War II over Bessarabia. So because Romania wouldn't give them Bessarabia, which was a place on the border with the Soviet Union that had a lot of Russians, that was the Soviet Union reason to declare war on Romania. Yeah.
Well,
so,
look
so
at
how
about just Ukraine right now. We've got a war going in Ukraine that was I don't think that Russia made any formal declaration. I think they just kind of walked in. I don't think there is a specific declaration, whereas we actually have declarations.
Yeah. You know, I literally just forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, that's okay. Listen, I probably distract you too because I ask you too many questions. you folks
well,
listening are like, Greg, shut up, let him talk. Okay,
more.
Fine. What's that?
Well, I mean, people have asked more in the past.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, you're doing fine. Listen, I love having you on the show. In fact, Pianki wants to talk to you, so let me bring him on. He can confuse you even further. Pianki, you're on with Christian Frenette, our youngest, I guess, commentator, reporter. He also has teamchess.com, which I'll get him to plug shamelessly in a little bit. You got a question on the Mexican-American War, sir? Pianki?
Well, you know, Mexico, I tell you what, you had American soldiers volunteer from far off as Americans volunteer for their war, as far off as New York, and walk. They couldn't take Amtrak, North Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, how long did it take to get there? That's well, they had trains, though. When was the railroad, the Transcontinental Railroad? Was about that time also, wasn't
that
it?
That was
1840?
Yeah, that was nowhere down there.
Christian, were there trains from New York to Texas, Christian? What do you think?
No, but they walked.
Well,
they drove.
Hold on, one at a time, guys. Let me get Christian first.
I don't think there possibly could have been.
Oh, okay. Because?
Because Texas wasn't even American yet.
Okay, so that makes sense. That'd be an international train route at that point. Okay, that makes sense. So the soldiers had to walk there. Great.
Yeah,
they walked and drug cannons.
Uh-huh.
They walked and drug cannons with them.
You know what's interesting about this war is it's one of those that I don't think it's taught much in the schools. I think history's kind of forgotten it. What I know of the war, because I was a San Francisco tour guide, is that there was a Mexican garrison in San Francisco. It was the northernmost outpost of the nation or empire of Mecca, whatever it was called back in those days. And we sailed in. We literally, someone, I think it was Polk, set a ship of Marines around Cape Horn, because there was no Panama Canal yet. So they sailed months, right? So, okay, go get them. You know, months later, they arrive in San Francisco, attack the garrison, win, you know, declare the Mexican War started, and I guess fought from San Francisco down into Mexico again, taking Texas along the way, is what I'm guessing. Christian, how am I doing? How's my history?
You're doing pretty good.
Okay. Feel free to correct me. Let's get the record straight.
So, well, the United States initially offered Mexico $30 million. They didn't take it. And after the war, they settled for $15 million. And you had the Irish come out of New York and went down to fight with Mexico. It was called the Irish Brigade.
Well, that's interesting. Well, the Irish are treated horribly in New York. You know, the Sullivan laws that came later, you know, expressions like the paddy wagon to arrest all the drunk Irish. You know, Irish could not find work. you know, Irish were treated, you're talking about bigotry and prejudice. The Irish were treated horribly. And the Irish, go ahead, yeah.
I stand to be correct. It was called the St. Patrick Brigade that went to join New Mexico. Yeah.
Okay. So were they then able, after fighting for Mexico, to come back to the United States? There's a question.
I don't know.
Because if
I
you fight for
so,
foreign power.
I don't know.
Well, and the reason I'm asking is because as a naturalized American, if I served in a foreign military, I could have my citizenship revoked or rescinded. And so if I even work for a foreign government, I can have my citizenship revoked. Most people don't know that. That's why that guy Vindman, remember, he was was offered the job of Secretary of Defense of Ukraine because he's Ukrainian, even though he was a high-up general in the United States. If he took that position, he knows, and nobody really said it during the hearings, but he could have lost his citizenship. And I think during the Trump administration, he should have. But people don't realize that. So I'm wondering, if you fight on the side of a foreign government, you know, do you lose whatever status you have in this country? If you're born here, you can't lose your citizenship. You can have all kinds of things happen to you, but you can't lose your citizenship. But if you're naturalized and you fight for a foreign army.
Well, the U.S. don't recognize dual citizenship, because you go to war against another country, then you stand to be interned like the Japanese were.
Yeah. But they were American citizens. They weren't Japanese citizens.
Yeah,
we're talking about interning Americans.
Yeah,
they didn't
were
have
American
citizens. Yeah, well, they might have. Well, here's what's interesting. And Christian, you see how fast we divert on our topics? This is why it's fun to be on the show here. But as a Canadian, as a born in Canada Canadian, Canada still recognizes my Canadian citizenship. I can get a Canadian passport anytime I want. The United States doesn't recognize it. They only recognize my United States citizenship, and this is where my allegiance is. You know, it's just interesting to note that different countries will treat you differently. You know, once a British subject, always a British subject. You know, British folks have 5 and 6 passports sometimes. For all the different places they live, reside, and can gain, you know, citizenship. So it's different. The United States is uniquely, at least used to be, really good about citizenship, you know, and that it means something up until, you know, Brandon opened up the southern border, which is interesting. Now, Christian, so let's expand our chat a little bit here. So the southern border, you know, is Texas, basically. Has it moved since the Mexican-American War? Has it always been in the same place? Did it shift up and down a little bit? You know, did Teddy Roosevelt have something to do with this at all? What's been going on with our southern border? How has that changed? I'm just curious.
So,
and you may not know this. Yeah.
So there kind of has been a change in the border.
Okay.
So after the Mexican-American War, after the American troops took Mexico City, instead of just taking all that land, they still bought it, but just for half price. They gave Mexico half of the original offer for all that land that they took. And then I think a year or two later, they bought another small little, like very small little chunk of land along the Mexican border close to New Mexico, or New Mexico is today, I should say.
Okay. Yeah, everybody thinks we stole land from Mexico, or Mexico is popularizing that thing. Of course, a lot of crazy folks in California are saying, the United States stole. We didn't steal it. We bought it. And we had a war. And this is what happens in war.
Wars change
borders. That's what wars do. Yeah. Jackie?
Yeah, the contention on the border, the contention of what the border would be, the border now is the Rio Grande River. But Mexico wanted to be another river, and I can't think of the name of it, which is north. Further north into Texas, but of course that didn't work out. So the border now is Rio Grande, and that is Texas border. You know, United States boundaries is when you walk toward the ocean, and your feet start getting wet. Then you walk back in about 20 feet. Those are your national borders, and the rest of it is state borders. States have a right to defend those borders.
Well, I think now we have a territorial limit. It used to be, it was 3 miles, then 12 miles. And that came about because that's how far the cannons could fire. And they figured international law, you can't claim more territory than your cannons can reach. This is why navies were developed too. But I think now we have a 200-mile limit as far as resources like fishing and mining and things like that. So I think there are different territorial limits. I think it's been expanded beyond just the shoreline. But if you're talking about physically present on the United States, like Cubans when they come here, you know, what is it, feet wet, feet dry, I think it's called. You know, if the Cubans escape Cuba and they actually be on the shore, then they can stay. But if they're caught anywhere on the water, they can't, which to me is an absurd policy. But anyway, but I think that's how it works. So, Bianca, you're saying what, 20 feet from the water? You know, 20 feet in the water or 20 feet up the beach?
You broke up.
Where are you talking about? I broke up again?
You broke up after you said Cuban.
I hate, this is the thing, the one thing I really can't stand about Blog Talk is they will usually cut out the most, you know, whatever the most significant thing I'm saying, they'll take that word out and then I can't get a broadcast. Now, the Cubans, when they come here, who escaped Cuba, at what point can they stay? Is it 20 feet up the beach or is it 20 feet from the beach? What constitutes American soil? That was my question. Did I break up again? Oh,
nope.
Pianki dropped. Let me ask.
Okay, he dipped.
Okay, so maybe it was his phone. Maybe it was his phone, not Blog. Sorry, Blog Talk. I shouldn't cast aspersions unless you guys generally cause me a problem, which happens occasionally, but sometimes I cause my own problems here. All right. So do you know the answer to that, or should we continue back to our Mexican-American War?
No, I don't. Let's continue back.
Okay. So.
So what do you want to hear about next?
Well, I'm just curious. Is the results of this? Oh, I think he's back now. Yeah, Pianki's back now. So maybe it was his line. So is your line, I guess. Welcome back, Pianki.
Yeah, I experienced that yesterday, so I had to call back in twice until I got a clear, understandable announcement from Blog Talk.
Okay. Well, maybe they are having some issues. We had one a couple of Mondays ago where the show just wasn't even. You know, wasn't even on. It was off the site. But yeah, so they're going through growing pains. They're fixing stuff up, which is good.
But
all right, so we only have a couple. Yeah, we only got a couple minutes left with Christian.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one thing about that war goes to show you that a group of people, a state, has the right to secede. And I notice how people want to accuse those states in the Civil War that seceded and want to call them traitors. But you don't call Mexico, I'm sorry, you don't call Texas a traitor for seceding from Mexico. So that's the will of the people. That's what they wanted to do. And one thing that it shows is Mexico didn't have any border protection because you had Americans coming into Mexico unperturbed. They wasn't vetted. And then sooner or later, after they got enough population, they decided that, no, we don't want to be a part of you no more. We want to be a part of the United States. So.
How much of this was actually a war? I mean, how many armed forces are we talking about? How many battles were there? How long did this war last? Casualties? Do you have any figures on the actual war itself, Christian?
War.
Yeah, let's see what Christian's got at his disposal here. Christian, how big was this war? How many battles? What? How serious was the fighting?
So. The war was 2 years.
Okay.
And there were quite a few battles. I think there was like $3 million worth of like industry destroyed or something in Mexico.
And that would be an $1,800, so it's probably $3 billion today. Yeah. Okay.
Probably a metric.
So, but did we send troops there? Were there major supply lines? Were there naval battles? I think there was either Veracruz or Guadalupe where we had the treaty that gave us a lot of land from the Mexican-American War, you know, New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Texas. I'm just the scope of this war, how big was it? And how powerful was Mexico as a nation at that point?
So Mexico was very, very weak.
Okay.
Yeah, because they had just come out of gaining independence from Spain because they were part of the Spanish Empire, and they didn't really decide who was going to be the guy at the top. So you have a bunch of these different rebel groups all mm-hmm. fighting to be the one on top. So it was very bad.
So would you say we took advantage of a Mexico that was weakened because it was so recently independent from Spain?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Pianki, did you have a comment? I love talking history. This is fun.
Well, yeah, there was in turn a fighting amongst each other.
Okay.
But I think that the major thing was when they jumped Sam Houston, then when they had a patrol, a Mexican patrol ran into those Americans and killed up a bunch of them. And But the Alamo, that's what kicked that off.
So the Alamo's a little earlier. Okay, so let's make some connections here, because I think I know I'm confused, and I think a lot of people are. Again, we have patches of knowledge. So Texas was an independent, I guess, nation. Mexico wanted it. We had Americans, you know, Davy Crockett, Sam Houston, some other folks at the Alamo. No, Sam Houston wasn't the Alamo. Who was at the Alamo? Davy Crockett, Daniel Boone, some other folks. Anyway, so Alamo was attacked in 1836, and then Mexico went into Texas from there. And then Sam Houston defeated Santa Anna's army shortly thereafter, if I remember. And then Texas became independent. Have I got that right?
Santa Anna left and came back. And one valley lost his leg. Matter of fact, they were dragging his leg through the streets.
Oh, geez. Sorry about that. You folks having breakfast. Hey, we got Josie on the line, too. I wonder if she can add some of this before we get to her report. Christian, do you have to go or do you have a couple of minutes?
Yes, I do. It was great. It was great being on here again. It's fun when I'm on here, but I do have to go. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Plug your website, and then we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Everyone, go to teamchess.com. I have a free chess session every Sunday at noon on Zoom. And thank you for having me on, Greg.
Oh, my pleasure. We'll talk to you next week. If you're on, we'll figure that out.
Goodbye.
Okay. Thanks, Christian. You take care. All right. Let's get to Josie.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossie knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossie.
Yeah, I just want to say to Josie, if you want to talk to Christian, I don't know if he's on next week or not, but you know, feel free to call in early because he's 14 years old, and he was our youngest person. He actually started reporting on the show at age 11, and so it's really fun to have him on. I don't hold back with him. Just to let people know, I do not pull my questions. I do not treat him like a kid. I would ask him the same things I would ask any adult, and so this is why I'm really glad to have him on the show. Josie, good morning. What do you think?
Good morning. Buenos días, doble ultra.
Doble ultra. Buenos días. Yeah,
guten Tag. Yeah, he's a smart kid.
G'day.
Very
smart.
Yeah,
he's a smart kid. Yep. Yeah. That's Shelby's kid.
I like him.
Yeah, he is a smart kid.
Yep.
He is a smart kid. We should let him do an entire show.
Yeah. Well, actually, if he wants to co-host, we have our Friday guest host hour, which no one's taken me up on. Pianki dropped again. Pianki's having phone problems this morning, so he'll be popping in and out. But, he is. He's great fun. And so I want to give him – well, he's in school, though, so he's summertime, I guess, now. But he's busy. So, but if he has a spare half hour, you know, during the week, I'll find a place for him on the show because he is that good.
I think you had him for half an hour one time, didn't you? He was hosting the show one time.
Well, Shelby's been busy. Shelby's trying to be Love Boat.
Love Boat, her mom.
Actress. She wants to play Julia, the cruise director, and Shelby's a cruise director. So she knows a lot more than the previous actress about doing the job because she did it for, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. I'm not sure, but yeah. So Shelby's trying to be Julie. So it's good. Cruise director. Yeah. I want to be
That's
Isaac, the black bartender. That'd be my job. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
But
what?
I was watching something funny last night. Justin Trudeau from Canada. He said, "Hey, come on in, come to Canada and have your abortions." Since like making fun on the United States. But the
what a sweet thought. Do you have to have a vaccine first? Do you have to have a vaccine before you have an abortion?
You got it.
I mean, I shouldn't laugh at this, but it's so tragic, it's funny.
But it's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, we're going to keep abortion safe, but we're going to kill the mother with a vaccine. Okay, that's
exactly.
Interesting.
Yep.
That is fascinating.
My husband and I laughing silly.
Yeah, I mean,
it.
You shouldn't laugh at this. I mean, it's not funny, but it is funny. It's funny because
it's so
irrational. Okay, so think about that.
Yeah.
My body, my choice, except for the vaccine and the fact that it's somebody else's body we're talking about here. So here's the problem, though. Here's the crazy part, though, because if Canada is saying, you know, come on in for an abortion, and they're forcing a vaccine, uh-huh. assuming before the abortion, you know, you're already affecting uh-huh. the baby with this forced vaccine. I mean, that's like a chemical, you know, abortion in many ways anyway. So you're already, you know, killing the baby. A certain amount are going to die from this, and yep. a certain amount will be crippled for life, and a certain amount. So think about that. Think about how crazy this world is we live in right now, that they say, okay, come on in for an abortion. But in the process, mm-hmm. you made that, you know, so much for keeping them, quote, safe for the mother, because now they're making them dangerous for the mother, you know, but and so many other alternatives anyway. I don't understand this. Give me a woman perspective.
Is there any reason
not to adopt or go with extended family or, you know, convert parental rights to the father? Because I know a lot of men, you know, lose kids. You know, is there any reason at all why abortions have to exist in our society? Is there any good at all from them? I can't think of any.
No, I think it's selfish. I'll give you an example. I had a girl that walked in my store last week, pregnant, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very thin girl. And I don't know, I said, are you okay? She said, yeah. And one thing led to another. And before you know it, we were praying. But she said, I want to give my baby away. I said, I'll take it. And she didn't expect that.
And she goes,
I'm trying to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a family that will take my baby. And, you know, there's many families that want a brand new newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why do you want to give up your baby? You're a beautiful girl, you know, very nice. She almost looked like a Spanish girl. And mm-hmm. She goes, well, I just got a full-time job. And I do have two kids, and I cannot afford the third one. I'm going, but the government helps a lot of the women. I said, have you asked for help? And she said, yeah, but they deny the help. I think she's lying, because if she's a single parent, the government helps people with milk.
Yeah,
with
but you know that,
we've
talked about this, that the incentive is every time you have another kid, you get extra money. And so I am for limiting child support from the government to, you know, the first kid, and you don't get additional money for additional kids. You know, now, mm-hmm. given that, the fact that she's pregnant and has a kid on the way, there's still adoption. I mean, you can drop kids off in a fire station. They have what they call that, you know, I don't know, I think that's national. I know it's in California. I remember when I was there, you had the signs outside the fire station, you know, safe home. And they had like the baby and the blankets and the big arms.
You can drop it off at any time.
Drop your baby right here.
Yeah.
Okay. And so rather than have the baby go through, you know, become an abortion. So there's so many alternatives out there. You know, again, even
you're right.
Now, if she wants to have the baby adopted, that's wonderful. You know, because then the baby lives and gets a family, and because, like I said, there's plenty of people who need it. And the fact that she's, you know, responsible enough to say, okay, I can't support a third child. Okay, that's to her credit. You know, I mean, getting pregnant in the first place, that's another story. You know, I don't believe in accidental pregnancies.
She was telling me her ex-husband shares a little bit of custody on the kids, but he doesn't help her with money. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how that works. If you went to the court, you know, usually he's responsible to help you support the kids.
Well, the courts go after men because they want that's how they keep their welfare costs down. Child support is the welfare check reduction. So that's why the courts, and they don't care if the man's the parent or not. If the woman names some guy the parent, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Paternity suits are saying, well, wait a minute, I'm not the father here. Well, it doesn't matter. You've been paying, so you're going to keep paying. What? You know, that's a whole other issue. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the reason she wants to get rid of this baby is because the father is from Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. and he's gone. And I don't know if she's trying to get back with her first man or not, but it's a mess. But anyway, I pray with her, and she gave mm-hmm. me her number, and I told her I'll be happy to take your baby if you don't find another family, which I'm sure she will. I said, but I'm pretty sure when you get ready to give birth, you're going to change your mind. You're going to keep your baby, I told her. So I'm going to help her with some items.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I have a brand new rocking chair that I can help her with and stuff. So.
Well, here's a question. Yeah. I mean, you know, my folks didn't talk to me a whole lot about relationships in terms of what they really were like. You know, do kids, are kids getting from their parents any knowledge, real knowledge, you know, practical knowledge, you know, sex, relationships, birth control, the emotions, the details, you know, the consequences of pregnancy, the, you know, the lifetime commitment, the whole bit. I mean, are kids, you know, learning at all. Mm-hmm. You know, why are, you know, it's like when people say, well, president, you know, they have like an accidental unplanned pregnancy. I'm thinking, well, somebody plans mm-hmm. either not use birth control lie or the fact, because mm-hmm. they usually, you know, birth control usually works when used, you know, appropriately, you know, so I'm sort of wondering, you know, did people think it wouldn't happen? Were they like, you know, playing roulette, you know, saying, well, maybe I won't get pregnant this time. You know, I mean, I just wonder what goes through people's minds. You know, where they put themselves in a position where they have a pregnancy and now they have to deal with it, as opposed to either taking precautions ahead of time, learning different things about themselves or the other person, or just all the infinite amount of things you can do to not be in a situation where you have a single woman pregnant.
Yeah.
For both men and women to, you know, get their act together.
Yeah. Usually in the past, mm-hmm. the family gather and the family took care of that baby, or they give mm-hmm. it to an aunt, or they send the girl away so that nobody found out about it, and then the baby somewhere in the family, you know. But mm-hmm. Like one of my daughter's girlfriend, she disappeared for a year. She went to visit her mom in another state, mm-hmm. and I heard that she had an abortion over there. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's
I'm sorry.
Sad.
Yeah.
But
well, parents force young girls to get abortions all the time, don't they? Because they don't want the bother.
Do, yes.
Yeah.
I have witnessed so many moms bringing their child to the abortion clinic, and one little girl, she's screaming and crying. She didn't want to have the abortion. She was 14. Mm-hmm. And because of her screaming and crying inside the abortion clinic, another young lady stormed out of the clinic, and she kept her baby when she heard the little girl screaming, and they were forcing her. The mom and the aunt were holding her legs to perform the abortion, and the little girl didn't want it. And
you know, 14-year-olds have rights too. If a girl is pregnant at 14, I mean, you know, I don't care about 18-year-old adulthood. That's her decision.
Yeah.
You know, and it's this whole thing bothers me. I mean, you know, yeah. Jackie, go ahead. Yeah, it's just the whole thing bothers me a lot.
This article here says Newsom's bill allowed 12-year-olds to get abortions without parental permission.
Well, see, that's another problem.
That is sad.
Because you got a lot of good parents out there that would care for their kids and would support their kids, and they may not agree with the decision of their kids, but they would still support their kids. You know, you have to come from an actual loving family. Yeah, but it's like we've got families, it's a crapshoot, because you've got wonderful families that would support their kids when their kids make the most horrendous of mistakes, and you got families that will absolutely be tyrants over their kids, you know, for trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Families are weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Greg, when the caravans were coming through the border in Mexico here, mm-hmm. about 200 young girls from eight and a half to 13 were pregnant. 200 girls that were mm-hmm. coming to America to give birth to babies. And
yeah, and I bet they're encouraged
girls,
to do that because they're supposedly getting American citizenship, which is illegal. But yeah, that's, you know, you don't see abortions at the border, do you?
No. And some of the young girls that the parents knew that they were going to be raped by the cartels or coyote or the gangs coming in and the group, they gave them birth control on the way at 8 and 9 years old. I mean, that's insane. Literally, this is horrible.
No, it is.
Horrible. It's just. And in California, they have agency selling babies. Yesterday I was watching a program on 60 Minutes that this woman sold twin little girls twice to parents in Europe, and she was ripping people off, and now she wants her babies back. It's a scam. I mean, I don't know. It's out of control, and I don't see how babies can be sold to leave the country like that, and this is
They pretending it's an adoption agency, and they're actually a false. They're not really an adoption agency. Okay, so so you know what it really comes down to is that everybody has to start really thinking. I mean, we always did. You know, back when I was a kid, they still had shame. I mean, being, you know, pregnant and not being married was shameful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that disappeared, so we don't have that anymore. families would support their kids. And I think families are so split these days, especially with the amount of single mothers out there because of the Great Society Welfare Program and the absence of fathers, that you don't have hardly any kind of family support. I mean, kids are raising themselves and they're on their own. So they're making mistakes that they wouldn't necessarily make had they had a father and mother and someone to talk to, or at least one parent, you know, to sort of talk to and say, okay, I need to ask you about the world. Tell me about the world. Okay, let me tell you about the world. This is the way it is. You know, this is what happens if you do this. This is what happens if you do this. You know, here are the consequences. You know, here are the good parts, here are the bad parts. And so I don't think kids have that now. They can't trust their teachers because the teachers are trying to change their stacks. You know, they can't trust, their – go ahead.
In California, there's a 12-year-old little girl that the mom is fighting and taking them to court. They've been guiding and training this little girl in school to become a tranny. And this is sad because they said your parents don't have to know or nothing. So they were guiding and changing this little girl. And this little girl wants to have her sex change and everything. And the mom is like enraged, overwhelmed. She already got a lawyer. And this is the teachers' union in our country right now. They're trying to change the identity of our children. And
do you know why?
Let the parents know.
Yeah. Do you know what's behind this? I don't think it's just money. I think my theory is that they're trying to kill everybody's identity. And if you can kill your identity with whether you're a man or a woman or a boy or a girl, if you take that away from kids, that's one of the major parts of their identity. You know, you identify with family, you identify with country, you identify with religion, and you identify with your sex, whether you're male or female. That's huge. Governs what you wear, governs how you act, governs how you see yourself. Yeah. So that's what it seems like. Now, can we make any connection? You know, what is the teachers' union specifically getting out of destroying gender identity in kids and confusing them? Why are they doing it?
They're paying them.
Who's paying them? Who's doing it?
Our government.
Where's the money coming from?
Our government.
So why would our government do it? I want to follow the money here. You don't have to know the answer. I'm just trying to explore the question.
I don't know
why
the answer.
Is it? Yeah.
Because our government
is
evil. Our government is evil. You cannot trust our government at all. They're trying to poison us with food. They're trying to kill us with a vaccine. They're trying to kill us while we're in the womb. And this has been going on for a long time. These people are pure evil, 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 evil. And they've been trying to do all this stuff with everything, medicine. Look at how they have all the old folks hooked. I mean, some of the people that I know, this lady that I know, she must have 300 bottles of meds in the drawers. And she keeps buying more online because she's so addicted. Let me have a happy pill. Let me have a sleeping pill. Let me have a depression pill. I mean, this is not America. This is criminals that are trying to murder our people in this country in so many different ways. And this transgender thing got to stop. This has to stop.
Well, it does. And like I said, this is new. I mean, I've never seen anything like this before. You know, if a parent... especially in a custody battle, took one of their children. I think this is actually happening. I think that if the school is doing it, but there's a father that's fighting to have his boy remain a boy, and the mother wants to turn him into a girl. And I remember this Texas case, you know, and of course that makes news, and they're going to family court, and they're having all kinds of disputes. But if the teachers do it, it's okay. If parents do it, then you can get to family court and get to other places.
Exactly.
So the real question, what we really need is to have teachers accountable under child protection. So in other words, if teachers go beyond teaching, if they're getting into the world of parenting or trying to control children's beliefs, ideas about themselves, identity, or things like that, that gets into child abuse. And we need to, I think, look into, I'm curious Pianchi's opinion on this too, whether we should have teachers accountable under child protective laws, that they are responsible if they go beyond teaching. And I don't know who we should get some. I need somebody that knows this well so they can write it. This is definitely a bill we need. Bringing teachers under child protective laws or something like that. Yeah. How do we go about that?
I can talk to Debbie from Common Core. She knows more about it, legal stuff, that we can take approach or write a bill about it, because this has to stop. Our children are suffering. They're brainwashing our children in school. And it's just going beyond, I mean, so many things. I mean, and the teachers are getting away with it because they're teacher, you know. School starts at home, like I always say, and the parents, the problem is the parents are so busy. Like I leave the supermarket and I see parents on the phone like 15, 20 minutes, you know. I watch them while I'm in line from the window outside, and they're like texting or doing whatever they're doing, and that's 15, 10, 20 minutes wasting time. And they don't have time to go to any meetings at the school. They don't know what's going on. I see moms coming to my store with little tiny babies. Instead of giving them a little book or a little toy, they're giving them the phone. And the phone is being trained, the children as baby already. They're molding the children. So, anyway. But I also – go ahead.
No, you're fine. I'm going to hear what the rest of your part. We've got Peter coming up in a few minutes. I want to make sure we get your report in. Yeah.
What I wanted to say is in Arizona, Carrie Lake, she's a candidate running for governor. And, man, I love her. She was talking on Fox. And
I saw that report last night. I saw that report with Brett Baer. Yeah, for anybody that missed it, I don't know if you can catch it on the video.
Man.
But Fox News is dedicated to the myth, to the lie that this was an honest election in 2020.
Know.
They're absolutely dedicated to it. And Carrie Lake said it a couple of times. It's really, I'm surprised they had her back on. But she said it's a fraud, you know. And I'm surprised she didn't mention the Arizona audit when Brett Baer says, well, there's no real evidence about this. I said, what, did you miss the audit? Did you miss, you know, the dozens of hours of testimony? Where were you? You know, I mean, the affidavits.
Yeah.
So she should have a stack of affidavits behind it, beside her on this. See these affidavits? These are the ones alleging election fraud under oath.
In the report.
Under oath.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
And
she says
if she wins, she will immediately finish the wall in the area of Arizona and stop this nonsense. And she was saying, since she's in the report, she said 5.5 ton of fentanyl. It's enough to kill 2 billion people, and that's what's coming in through those borders from Mexico, you know, the drugs.
Well, you know what else? Yeah, but I'll tell you what else she said that I think was really interesting, too. I'm curious your reaction. She said all those illegal aliens that are coming to Arizona, I'm going to get rid of them. They're going to go. They're going to go home.
Yes.
Now, think about that. Now, she obviously has a plan for doing that. So now I'm curious. I'm going to try and get her on the show now because I'm kind of intrigued by it. I wanted her on the show anyway.
Yeah.
But the fact that she said, we're going to send those illegal aliens back. So what that means is, and she's not the only state. We've got to talk to Florida about this. We've got to get down to our governor. That's why I was glad to have a little chat. I actually did get a quick chat with Matt Gaetz, you know, person to person, last at the Saturday rally, which is good. But I'm hoping he'll come back on the show. I'm working with their staff.
Good.
Hopefully we'll do that. But one of the things we need to talk about, you know, is both federal civil asset forfeiture, which, of course, it won't go to the federal. It's got to come at the state level. But Matt Gaetz has a lot of connections at the state level. We need to talk to Governor DeSantis' office and talk about civil asset forfeiture.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk to Carrie Lake, and I want to find out how does she want to keep those illegal aliens out? How does she want to get them out of the state of Arizona? Because this is the trend. Pianki talks about this all the time, right? The states take charge. So if we secure our state border of Florida, right, Arizona secures their state board. I'll ask Cheryl Todd, who is on, she has the Gun Freedom Radio show. I'll talk to her. Maybe she has a connection to Carrie Lake. So let me write that down. She's really busy, though. Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Cheryl Todd. Wasn't she great
really
when she was on?
Her a lot.
Yeah. So I'll put ask her, see if she can connect us with Carrie Lake.
Yeah.
That'd
be
great. But I want to know how she wants to do it. I want to know
how
Carrie Lake wants to keep the illegals out. And is she using civil asset forfeiture or is she using something else?
Well, it's going to be, let me tell you, Greg, and I know Donald Trump has a plan when he returns how he's going to get him out, but it's going to be a little tough because not all the illegals are collecting from the government, and I think that's how they're going to track them, you know, how much money they're getting and all that. Like, I know an illegal, she's about to give birth soon, and they told her she's getting like $300 in food stamps free already, and they're going to help her with her child with everything.
Well,
they're getting
the hardest
cash.
Thing is going to be to de-certify these illegal citizenships that are being granted simply being born in the United States. That's the real challenge, and that's the real goal, okay? And so we need to start talking about
that.
Well, actually, it's not that hard to do. because the 14th Amendment clearly says if your allegiance, yeah. if you are subject to the jurisdiction of another country by citizenship. Now, I've read the original debates on the 14th Amendment. So I know exactly what they said. If you are subject to the allegiance of another country, you know, it's very only the 14th Amendment out here, then you cannot be an American citizen. You know, in fact, so American citizens are born. It's see, this is the thing that everybody gets wrong. Okay. Being born on American soil really means nothing. Okay. Because we have Americans, you know, diplomats who are born on foreign soil all the time. And I'm not talking about at embassies. They're, you know, they're Americans who are born, you know, on airplanes on their, in the middle of the ocean, you know, 35,000 feet, you know, they're Americans because their parents are Americans. 14th Amendment, very clearly, all persons born or naturalized in the United States, and here's the key phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. That is not a geographical jurisdiction. That is a citizenship jurisdiction. How do I know that? Because we're talking about persons born or naturalized in the United States. The whole paragraph is about citizenship. Because it says right there. All right. Are citizens of the United States in the state in which they reside, wherein they reside. Okay. This is a citizenship jurisdiction. Citizenship jurisdiction is dependent on not being subject to another, you know, nation by virtue of such. That's why Kamala Harris is an illegal alien because neither of her parents were in the country legally. Now, if that's now, so what we can do, and here's how you do it. It's going to be now the liberals are going to scream and howl, and quite frankly, I don't give a damn, but because we have to do this, but every person who was illegally by the 14th Amendment, mistakenly given citizenship, can have that revoked because they were born to illegal alien parents. And here's where it's going to get really interesting. You got to go back down the chain because everybody back to the original person has a fraudulent citizenship. Everybody who is allowed to stay in this country by chain migration is here fraudulently. This is going to be huge. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, but nobody has a right to be here illegally. And I don't care. You know, it's like if you steal a, if you rob a bank and 20 years later, you still got the money. Can you keep it? No. You rob the bank. Okay. There's no statute of limitations on being here because illegal aliens are committing a crime every single day. So we're not talking about the crime of coming here 20 years ago. We're talking about the crime of being here today. You're committing a crime. Okay. So it's not like this is something. So statute of limitations runs longer than a day. You know, so all, now here's the way you trace it. And Pianki talked about this too. Pianki, well, you've been kind of quiet today. But the ITIN number, the individual tax identification number, is the number that the IRS created, I've forgotten which administration, to tax illegal aliens and sort of have them pay, you know, for being here, you know, illegally. So at least, you know, the IRS is getting money from these folks. Well, that's wrong.
Yeah, some of them are paying tax.
Yeah, but that's no way to – you can't stay here because you're paying tax to the IRS.
I know.
You cannot pay taxes as an illegal alien. Okay?
Many of them are buying the Social Security, though. It's very expensive, like $3,000.
Yeah, we have to go through all the Social Security numbers. In fact, everybody should contact Social Security and see if your number is being duplicated anywhere. I'm going to do that myself. I'm going to call them up and say, hey, is anybody else using my number?
Well, what you do on that – you do on that is ask for a copy of a record of your earnings. And if you see some earnings that you don't know nothing about, well, they got your number.
Yeah, no, see, I checked my earnings for Social Security, I think a year or so ago, and there was nothing else on it but my earnings. So that's I guess nobody's using my number, which is good.
Yeah.
But who's to say they're not earning? What if they're just using your Social Security number as identification, but they're not using it for a job?
Yeah.
That's what I'm curious about. Yeah, Josie, go ahead.
Before I leave, I wanna request prayers for Dr. Carrie Majade. I don't know how to say her last name. She's a whistleblower that she's been talking a lot about the vaccine with Stu Peter. Lots of videos about the vaccine, about the new technologies, about a meeting that she went. And in the last video she made, she was talking about Dr. Gupta, that he's going to pay the price for what he's doing on Sesame Street, encourage parents for the children to get the shot. So, and now she was in a plane crash 2 days ago, private plane, and she's still alive.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this. We're going to get this on the doctor's panel because you know who else died recently?
Who?
The January 6th Sergeant at Arms in Congress, who was there. The Sergeant at Arms, the security guy.
Uh-huh.
He just died under mysterious circumstances. So we have – go to the Action Radio Special Investigations page. That's where I keep records of all the mysterious deaths. Yeah.
And And they're trying to murder all these doctors. Dr. Artis needs to get top security to keep him alive because they're going to come after him next. Dr. Selensko, I'm sure they did something. He was in critical. I think I read something yesterday. Do you know anything about Dr. Selensko?
No, I haven't. And I am in contact with him. You know, I haven't heard from him for a while.
Okay.
You know, but,
send him a message,
please. I'll send a message, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get him on the trying to get him on the doctor's panel. I mean, that's what I'd like to do is get him on our doctor's panel.
Well, he's very weak, though. I've seen a video of him, and yeah, he's not doing. I think he was in critical yesterday in the ICU. So
yeah,
send him a message, okay?
God
bless.
Yeah, and they're. Oh, you got to go. Okay, yeah.
Well, no, doctor, it's Dr. Peter.
Well, no, Dr. Price on the line right now, but I just want to make sure we cover this. But yeah, because there's a lot of. Well,
yeah.
This is what we're going to do Thursday: the mysterious deaths, the death of the Capitol Hill.
Yes.
Sergeant at Arms. You know, we've got Dr. Made, I guess that's how you pronounce it, M-A-D-E-J. We've got other folks that are going after. But yeah, this is serious. There's the there's a growing list of people that are, either and she's in critical shape.
There's
still but both Bianchi and I are pilots, so we want to I'm going to talk to him about this. We're going to see if we can get some investigative reports of what happened to the airplane, because it's a good airplane.
I'll try to get more in it. She has a lot of broken bone and everything, but I think she's going to be okay. But still. They're trying to kill her. And this is the CDC, FDA. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go to Dr.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. And we'll talk. Yeah. Thanks, Jeffy. Appreciate it. We'll talk very soon. There we go.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Be careful, Josie.
What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
And just to get Dr. Pry caught up, we have some very mysterious deaths that are happening of late and injuries. Now, the doctor that was in the airplane crash, who is basically a rebel like all us other rebels, she's in critical condition. It looks like she's going to be okay. It's going to take a few months. But it just looks very suspicious when she has an airplane accident, when the sergeant at arms at the Capitol January 6th dies mysteriously, when a bunch of other folks are injured or killed who are either about to give testimony or some other things happening. There's some serious problems. So maybe I should talk to Dr. Pry about this sometime. Maybe not today, but government assassinations. You know, the doing away of American citizens over time. Is there any truth to it, possibility of it? Or am I just kind of reaching, conclusions based on things that aren't necessarily evidence yet? I don't even know if you can talk about that, but it'd be an interesting thing to explore. Good morning, Dr. Pry.
Well, there's a lot of open source information and evidence on, including during the Obama years, on the assassination of American citizens overseas, which makes them fair game if they're affiliated with a terrorist organization. You may recall Obama had a kill list, and he was using cruise missiles to take out terrorists, including, some of them who had been leaders of terrorist movements. The intelligence agencies aren't supposed to collect intelligence. They're not supposed to engage in that kind of activity within our borders, but since we're no longer a constitutional republic, all the rules have all those rules have changed, and I wouldn't be surprised. You may recall when Bill Clinton was president, there was just a surprising number of people who were his critics or people who were close to him that. For example, his personal lawyer who went with him into the White House mysteriously committed suicide.
Sure he did.
And
Rose Law Firm. Who was that? Rose Law Firm. I'm trying to think of his name.
Yeah, the Rose Law Firm. That's right.
I can see it now.
For the guy, I actually visited the site where he allegedly committed suicide. Interestingly, it's a park.
Really?
On the Potomac River that's not far from CIA headquarters. So it was right on my way to work. And out of curiosity, I just decided to stop off there one day and go to the place where his body was found. When he,
is there a memorial or a plaque or anything?
No. There's nothing marking that. You'd have to know that he had done it. Maybe they've put up a plaque subsequently, but I doubt it. It's not like he was a, you know, prominent historical figure, but, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Somebody might have done something, yeah. Well, there's a history of people around the Clintons, and especially Hillary, you know, and I post them on that. We have an Action Radio. I know you're not a big Facebook person, but Action Radio, we have a special investigations page, and that's where I collect things like Seth Rich and some of the other people. The guy that died had a barbell fall on his neck before he was supposed to testify. You know, Brian Signick, I think, died of the COVID shot. He was the Capitol Police officer in the Capitol, and now we've just had the Sergeant-at-Arms. You know, considering the January 6th, you know, fake committee that's going around doing stuff, you know, was he about to testify? It's just, there's too many things to call this a coincidence. There's something going on. And that's why I raised the question.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we're seeing prominent members of the opposition party, for example, their constitutional rights being violated, being arrested. On Tucker just last night, there was a lawyer, a Trump administration lawyer,
mm-hmm.
And it's right on camera, you know, where they confiscated his cell phone. The FBI
yep.
confiscated his cell phone. And
that's
did it illegally.
That's John Eastman. John Eastman, Claremont Institute.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So
he's on my press
know,
release
these,
list. I know who he is.
Yeah, when the police agencies are they're talking about, you know, bringing charges against Trump and maybe putting Trump himself in jail, okay? So these are different times. I mean, the Constitution yeah. is being shredded in front of our eyes very daily. So, mm-hmm. you know, I wouldn't be surprised since these people are willing to just flagrantly, you know, violate people's constitutional rights, including really competent lawyers who are capable of defending themselves. You know, they are so bold about it. they think that the other side can't strike back, and maybe they're right because they can just go to a D.C. court with a D.C. judge and do whatever they want, and they are doing it. So, you know, they're getting away with murder in terms of murdering people's constitutional rights, not ordinary Americans as well, you know, people who go – who would believe that, you know, a mother who goes to a school board meeting to protest critical race theory would have her house raided and be arrested in front of her children by the FBI. Like, they don't have better things to do. I mean, so, you know, if things like this happening right in front of our eyes, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. All the January 6th so-called insurrectionists, which is just such a Stalinist show trial, those people being kept in prison against their constitutional rights, you know, and the other side, the 2020 rioters, you know, all gone walking off scot-free, even though they've attacked federal buildings, they've committed arson, they've murdered people, they walk away, no investigation. You know, and what's happening now with the abortion movement? It's proved violence, you know, by the left, you know, against their political adversaries, just like the brown shirts in Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we've got enough that we know is actually happening for real right on the television cameras to be extremely alarmed about where this country is going. And, you know, we've talked before on the show about how I think we are not a constitutional republic. I know you agree with that. You know,
oh,
we're not a constitutional republic anymore.
We have political prisoners.
We've become a tyranny. Mm-hmm. We're a tyranny, yeah. And mm-hmm. And it's a we're in the phase, like when the Nazis took power in 1933, or when the Bolsheviks took power. You know, we're in that phase of transitioning from a soft tyranny into a hard tyranny. You know, just like these third world banana republics or totalitarian states that we're so concerned about overseas. So, would I be surprised to find out that political you know, the people, inconvenient people are being mm-hmm. eliminated. They have the means. They have the motive. They are willing to do anything. They committed, mm-hmm. you know, false impeachments and a coup d'etat against the president of the United States. They stole the 2020 elections. Why are we surprised? We shouldn't.
Well, I'm not surprised. That's what I'm asking. But I don't know how to find out about these things. It's not like the government's going to say, here's our assassination list. You know, here's who our political prisoners we want done away with. You know, like, who's the king of England that said, who will rid me of this priest? And somebody went out and killed Thomas Becket.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, so it's all done privately now because we have internet. But how would I find out? You know, or maybe we should talk off the air. You know, is there a friend of a friend or like a contact to a contact? Is there some way I can research this, or do I just have to kind of, you know, work with the internet and hope for the best and see what I can, you know, put together from that? And you may want to tell me later.
You know, I don't know.
I'm just
curious. You have to know. Unfortunately, I don't have the name and number of the people who would be doing assassinations. You know,
well, no, but their friends.
It's far more likely that I would be assassinated that I would know. You know,
yeah.
who's actually
yeah.
doing it. You know, I'm not
same with all of us on the show.
Beloved
yeah.
of the Biden administration or of any of their acolytes.
Yeah.
You know, they've got, you know, they've replaced, well, I'll tell you one person, okay. You
mm-hmm.
know, Christopher Wray. Christopher
mm.
Wray, that piece.
I know that name.
You know. Yeah,
scumbag.
There ought to be a spotlight on him and what he's doing. you know, he is obviously signing off on the dual system of justice where the FBI is being used to go after the administration's political opponents
mm-hmm.
and has got a hands-off policy, you know, against the Antifa and Black Lives Matters and the brown shirts who serve the left. And it's so obvious to everybody that I guess it was on Tucker last night that the Senator Grassley apparently is going to have a briefing or and a conversation with Christopher Wray about these very matters. You know, not that I think Grassley is a great hero. You know, I'm glad that he's doing it, but he has got to be one of the, you know, I think he's one of the least effectual, you know.
No, sure, go ahead. Just say it. He doesn't. He's not.
Yeah.
He's not for the job. Let's just say he's not
well,
for the job.
Well, just look at him. You know, I mean, yeah. The guy has no energy. You know, he only acts.
Well, he's 90.
Absolutely has to.
He's like 90 years old.
At least he's better. He is better than Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham. I'll give him that. But what is that saying?
Yeah.
And I think the public pressure and the outrage has been so great that he's. As the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, no, he's not the chairman. He's the ranking member of the Judiciary
right.
Committee now. You know, he has no choice, you know, but to, you know, but to do this. So I applaud him that he is doing it. But
you know, there's a problem though. There's a problem with Congress.
I wish it was
because,
Ted Cruz. You know,
yeah, well, Ted Cruz would be better. But even with Ted Cruz. They all have the same problem that when an FBI or Justice Department or any from any department, any official of the Brandon insurrection, the illegal government presently occupying the White House, and I say that, you want to come after me? You know, spell my name right at least. Anyway, but the thing is, when any of these people say, I can't answer that question, the member of Congress lets it go, senator or
right.
representative. And that what they should say is, you don't have a choice. You have to answer this question. We are the oversight committee. We have responsibility for making sure you are following the law and following the Constitution. You don't have a choice. You have to answer this question. And because they're not saying that, and because they're not being backed up, obviously, by the Democrats running the committee, and that's because Mitch McConnell, even though there's a 50-50 Senate, McConnell should have said, we're going to have joint committees. We're equally represented in both parties here. There should be joint committee heads. He never said that. So he's a gelding. He's already wimped out. He gave the Senate to the Democrats for no reason whatsoever. But this fundamental thing, I've never heard it said, but it should be, you have to answer this question. You don't have a choice. I think they said that in Watergate. You know, well, you know, when Ehrlichman
yeah,
and Haldeman,
when
they
the
didn't
Democrats
have a choice.
Have power, they're very
right.
effective at using, you know, the tools of Congress, the tools of
right.
power in the service of their interests. The Republicans never have been. And
well, they were in Watergate.
You know.
against Nixon. The Republicans led that. That was Howard Baker and Sam Ervin, you know, and Howell Heflin, some of these other names that are popping into my head from 1972. Those were Republicans who went after Nixon, not Democrats, because they wanted the integrity of the government.
And you think that's an example of them being effective defenders of the Constitution? I don't think so. I think Nixon shouldn't have been impeached or shouldn't have been driven out of office.
Compared to today,
he didn't do anything, you know, as bad as what Bill Clinton did when Clinton was in office. And, Nixon was just trying to – Nixon didn't know about the Watergate break-in. He hadn't – well, we're going back into ancient history. His fault was that he was loyal to his friends, you know, and he was trying to protect people who thought that they were serving the interests of his presidency and his administration. And so he – you know, his crime was that was loyal to his friends and attempting to cover up for them, you know. Unlike Bill Clinton, you know, who was guilty of lying to the American people on major
Waco
substantive issues.
How about assassination of an entire community? You know, him and Janet Reno killed all the people at Waco.
I mean,
there you go.
Where he claimed that he had signed a treaty with Russia, where the Russians had detargeted America and their missiles were no longer aimed at us. You know, we detargeted Russia, and our missiles, by the way, are still detargeted. They're aimed at broad ocean areas, all right, because of the Moscow.
Oh, that's
treaty.
Interesting.
But his own CIA director, his own
Tell
serving CIA
this.
Director, Jim Woolsey, testified before the House Armed Services Committee. I was there because I was running the hearing, and he testified before the hearing that, you know, we can't verify the Moscow Treaty on the Russian side. We're just taking their word for it, and there's all kinds of compelling evidence that they haven't detargeted our missiles, you know, and that the president told the American people over 100 times, you know, that he had basically slayed the nuclear dragon or taken a step that had greatly increased our security because of the Moscow Treaty, the detargeting agreement. And, you know, that's a lie about a fundamental national security issue that his own CIA director would not support, you know. He should have been impeached for that, not for the Monica Lewinsky.
No, that was a stupid thing. That was a stupid thing, too. And we can argue about Nixon, too. Pros and cons of whether but he should have stuck around for a while, at least seen the process through. But to the point I was making with Republicans is that they at least have enough integrity to investigate and hold hearings, even if it's their own party. Is at stake. You won't see Democrats ever doing that.
Yes,
but we still get back to the main point.
They naively believed in that the Democrats were sincere about upholding the Constitution and they weren't motivated by politics. That's awfully stupid, given the hostility that existed to Nixon coming from the left, coming from the Democrat side. But that's the reason the Republicans piled on. That's why Nixon basically had to resign. You know, because he lost the support. He lost the support of his own party because the Republicans are the stupid party and they read the Washington Post and they believe it, you know?
Crazy. Well, tell me about I know we want to get into other things, but I think the Moscow Treaty ties into what what you sent me amazing information on submarine launched cruise missiles and the fact that 70% of South Koreans want nuclear weapons, which I agree with, that this Moscow Treaty, I'm not really familiar. I don't know if we really spent much time on that. That I don't think most Americans know that we're not targeting, you know, Russian and Chinese cities, you know, or Russian and Chinese nuclear targets while they are targeting our, you know, sensitive areas to nuclear weapons. I don't think most people know that.
Yes.
Pianki, Pianki's online. I wonder if he knew that. I didn't know that. Go ahead. When was this treaty?
Another potential vulnerability that we have, because they have to be – they have to be retargeted, re-aimed, you know, at targets in Russia or China or wherever.
How long does that take?
Well, it's supposed to be theoretically. It should take. It could be done in 30 seconds. Could be done in seconds.
Okay.
Theoretically,
okay.
You know, the actual mechanical process, but it's likely to take longer than that because it isn't a matter of because a president. Every scenario is likely to be very unique, and a president's going to have to decide. I mean, you're basically rebuilding the PSYOP. A president is going to have to decide, you know, if we're under attack, for example, you know, and he's going to have to decide quickly, well, what targets do I attack? And, you know.
No time. There's no time for that.
Right, exactly. So it's that could take a long time, you know, for the White House to actually decide what's going to be struck, you know.
Wait a minute, we've got a whole Pentagon
now,
that's
presumably
supposed to do
the Pentagon will have, the PSYOP is subdivided into major attack options and limited nuclear options, and but just explaining that to a president, you know, and say, well, here's the Chinese menu of choices you have, sir. So it could take, it could be too late. One of my chief concerns has always been, of course, the EMP attack, you know, mm-hmm. because there's a thing called, at least in the Cold War, I believe we're in the process of upgrading it. It's called the Command Data Buffer System. You know, mm-hmm. this is a big network of computers that has all the targeting data stored in it. And this is why you can, you know, the launch control facilities crews can basically push a button and quickly retarget it, quickly re-aim. You know, the computer enables them to do that, of course, but they have to know, you know, against what are they aiming? What does the president mm-hmm. want them to shoot at, all right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If there's an EMP before they've retargeted, you know, and these
they're not gonna retarget.
Are not adequately protected. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. The missiles themselves are potentially vulnerable to a super EMP attack, and these computer systems are even more potentially vulnerable. So one more imprudent step in the direction of making ourselves vulnerable to a disarming first strike, you know, and,
well,
you know, by
it's
having
it's worse
our...
than that. I think you've underestimated the danger because I'm just thinking this through in my head. If Russia and China know, which they obviously do, if we're talking about it, they know about it. They know that our missiles are targeted at the ocean. They know that if they launch their missiles, we'd have to retarget our missiles. And by the time that happens, their missiles will have destroyed our missiles. So we have the option of waiting for our missiles to be destroyed while we're retargeting or launch them into the ocean. Okay. And boil
right.
some fish. Okay. That's not an option. So in other words, what you've just said is that we have no nuclear deterrence because we need to launch into nothing or we can wait until our missiles are destroyed while we're retargeting. And if we have an EMP, we can't retarget anyway. We have no
exactly.
nuclear deterrence on the scenario that you just outlined.
Yes, I agree with that. I mean, I've written about this, you know, about this vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about it at the time and have written about it subsequently in our books. And, you know, we're always the last one. And, you know, we sign on to some arms control agreement. And even when we find out the other side has been violating, it takes years for us to ourselves say, well, this isn't binding on us anymore. You know, I mean, we've got an additional problem with the submarines in addition to them being detargeted because the ballistic missile submarines at sea are uh-huh. also detargeted and have to be retargeted. But in addition to that, during the Clinton years, it used to be before Clinton that the ballistic missile submarine commanders, you know, could execute their forces. They could launch those missiles. You know, they had on board what they needed. Clinton mm-hmm. took that away, so they need an emergency action message. So in addition to retargeting, they also have to get the launch codes, you know. So if the bad guys can cut you off from Washington, from the emergency action messages, that you can get what's called a system kill. The submarines are still alive. They're out there. There's only four of them, you know, that are out there on a daily basis. The rest would be destroyed in port. You know, and so this idea that we can have high confidence that our ballistic missile submarines would retaliate, you know, has never, well, it certainly hasn't been true since the Clinton administration. And in my recent article, I also point out, you know, about what would you do? I mean, if the ICBMs are destroyed and the bombers are destroyed in their bases, and the ballistic missile submarines that are in port are destroyed. So you've got about 300 to maybe 500, you know, depending upon the mix of ballistic missile submarines that are out there. You've got 300 to 500 warheads left that you can mm-hmm. Use. And what are you going to do with them? You know, assuming that you can get the emergency action messages and you can retarget them, attack empty ICBM silos, attack vacant bomber bases. Attack ballistic missile submarine ports that are emptied of submarines because the Russians are going to be sending their stuff to sea. And as soon as they, you know, they've got 30 minutes you know, to clear these things, maybe even longer. They might start doing it before they attack. And try to attack these impervious deep underground shelters. So in other words, and then if you expended those weapons in these futile attacks, now you have nothing. I mean, the submarines are supposed to be there to deter attacks on our cities. They're really supposed to be a secure strategic reserve that you don't use unless the other guys start attacking our cities. So that in the event that we lose the counterforce exchange, that we can at least keep them from blackmailing our cities because we can hold their cities at risk. That will give them free license, Russia, China, whoever, to go and conquer the rest of the world, but at least our cities will be. That's the theory anyway. So you're not even supposed to, if those submarines do survive, you're not really supposed to use them. That's how what the thinking was all through the Cold War. And it should be the thinking today. It's just that, you know, we've lost so much of our institutional memory about why the triad is structured the way it is and how our nuclear strategy is supposed to work. We've had this 30-year deterrence holiday where we have not been thinking about the unthinkable anymore. You know, the people who understood this stuff, or at least there's a very few of them, Admiral Charles Richard, the guy who's in charge of our STRATCOM right now, he understands. He's a great guy, but, you know, he's about to be replaced by a new general. I think his last name is Cotton. You know, and he will be the first black STRATCOM commander, and he's a critical race theory fanatic. You know, this isn't getting much attention.
Oh, now I feel secure.
Or anything.
You're
right,
so much
exactly.
Now.
But the guy who's going to be Admiral Charles will be replaced with this new guy who buys into the radical philosophy. In fact, one writer talking about his background said that this General Cotton, you know, was more likely to attack Texas than Russia. And
well, Merrick Garland,
if you really believe in critical race theory and America is institutionally evil and all of this crap. But I wanted to talk about a little good news today.
Oh, good. Please.
Because we did win a victory. It's actually been a good week for us, hasn't it, in terms of the conservative, you know, Roe versus Wade being overturned, freedom of speech being upheld by the Supreme Court.
Yep.
You know, so we've had, despite
the Second Amendment
all
case.
The bad news,
yeah.
You know, we've, right, you know, we've, and we have a little bit more good news that happened last week. And that was that the Slick'em N, the sea-launched cruise missile, the nuclear sea-launched cruise missile, has been saved, at least temporarily, by the Republicans and Democrats coming together and agreeing that it should be saved in the Senate.
Okay, why?
We actually
why did they do
bipartisan.
That? Is it money? Contractors? Did they actually do the right thing? Did they send the logic of this? Is it
actually,
aircraft carriers?
Think,
why did they do it? I'm curious.
Well,
I'm glad it did.
This is disparity because we're in the middle of a war with Ukraine, because these policymakers are concerned that we could end up getting in a nuclear war with Russia.
Mm, how about that?
And they're very aware. They have listened to Admiral Richard. He's one of the many, even General Miley, Biden's own top senior military advisors, including all the major officers in the Pentagon, have defied the Biden administration on this. The Biden administration's nuclear posture review has called for defunding the Slick'em N and getting rid of it. But all of them have said, look, you know, Russia has got this huge advantage over us in tactical nuclear weapons, at least a 10-to-1 advantage. This was our only hope, you know, to restore something like balance to this part of the deterrence equation. Admiral Richard rightly describes it as a deterrence crisis, the fact that we have this enormous gap, and we've talked extensively on this show about the tactical nuclear advantage that Russia has, that they could fight a limited nuclear war, you know, in theater, and we would not be able to do anything about it. One could argue that we don't have really any tactical nuclear weapons. I mean, the newspapers will say, well, we've got 100 to 200 tactical nuclear weapons in NATO Europe. But when you unpackage that and you see that Well, you know, these tactical nuclear weapons are, in order to use them, you have to get the agreement of all the NATO European states, and then you have to get the agreement of the host government to use them. And the United States can't even deliver them. It has to be delivered by the host government. So you're in a situation where if Russia were to attack Latvia, you know, we'd have to convince Turkey, for example, to make a tactical nuclear strike against Russia or in Latvia against Russian forces. And is Turkey likely to do that, invite a massive nuclear attack on itself? Right,
no.
Exactly. It's just not, for all practical purposes, those weapons are really not usable. I mean, for all practical purposes, we don't really have any tactical nuclear weapons because of that arrangement. Slick-O-Man would have given us tactical nuclear weapons that we ourselves can use that don't depend upon the host governments. They could be put on surface ships and attack submarines, you know, so that they could be in these dangerous neighborhoods, you know, in the Pacific, in the Middle East, you know, the cop on the beat, you know. And so that was the good thing. So even the Democrats agreed and have defied the Biden administration. Now, we're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah.
And by the way, we used to have, it was called the Tomahawk before the Slick-O-Man. We used to have Reagan deployed a system like this. And it was one of the weapons that enabled us to win the Cold War, to deter Russia from using its nuclear capabilities against us. And the Tomahawk was on attack submarines and surface ships, and also it could be used as an air-launched cruise missile. And, you know, we could do the same thing with the Slick-O-Man if it gets deployed. Obama got rid of all the Tomahawks, and that's why Trump brought them back at the request of the Pentagon. The Pentagon said, you know, this is what Obama did. He took away the last of our usable tactical nuclear weapons when he canceled the Tomahawk. His excuse, and it was a legitimate excuse, was that it was so old, you know, that they had to go. But he had no plans to replace them. This was part of his anti-nuclear agenda.
Yeah, that was
right.
The
and so Trump, Obama ignored his own Pentagon. Trump listened to the Pentagon, and when the Biden administration came in, it's the Biden administration nuclear posture review is still classified. Classified version has been provided to Congress, and there have been leaks. And one of the systems that the Biden administration is the most anti-nuclear administration we've got in history, worse than Obama. And, you know, and the Biden NPR called for killing the Slick-O-Man, and so Biden defunded it. And so we're not out of the woods. I mean, this issue gets debated every year. You know, the Biden administration is still going to be in office. They're going to still have their nuclear posture review, so we're going to have to refight this battle every year in order to keep the Slick-O-Man alive. And obviously, in this super partisan environment,
are they operational yet? Have they been deployed? Are they on submarines now?
No, they're under development. You know, that they don't actually physically exist yet. You know, because Tomahawks.
That's interesting.
They have to develop them. And there's also a question about the warhead. The Tomahawk warhead was the W-80. Will the W-80 still work? You know, the thing is 30, 40 years old. I don't even think they should be using the W-80. This should be used as an opportunity to develop a third-generation nuclear warhead that has ultra-low yields, the way the Russian warheads have. Now, the Tomahawk warhead could be dialed down to 5 kilotons. You know, and that's a low yield. But I'd like to see us have ultra low yields of 1 kiloton, less than a kiloton.
How much is that in terms of things people understand, like city blocks? I mean, what is a 1 kiloton in perspective?
A 1 kiloton weapon could be used to destroy a city block or an enormous building like the Pentagon. You know, if you dialed it below a kiloton, you could use it to blow up a bridge. Or attack a company of tanks. You know, you could use it. It'd be far more powerful, even below 1 kiloton, than a normal conventional weapon. But it could be decisive on a battlefield. 5 kilotons. You know, that's about a quarter of the yield of the Hiroshima bomb. That's still a low yield. But the it's not as low and selective as I would like. And it needs to be a selectable yield, because the Tomahawk, you could dial it up to 150 kilotons. And you're going to need that to go after command and control centers and hardened silos and hardened bunkers. So it should be a selectable yield, where we have ultra-low yields and then higher yields. And it also ought to have an earth-penetrating warhead, you know, because even at 150 kilotons, that's not enough to destroy a deep underground shelter. You know, the only way to do it is if you had an earth-penetrating weapon so that you could detonate the 150-kiloton warhead deep in the earth, and
right.
then you could get a shock wave that might
send
put
a MOAB,
risk, you know.
The mother
yeah,
of all bombs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, as like a dual thing. I saw Top Gun. I saw how that works. This is fascinating that this hasn't been developed yet, and I'm curious. One of the things I was thinking of, with Tomahawk technology, I mean, we still have B-52s. And the reason we have B-52s is that the airplane skin control service technology, the actual jet engines, that's fairly old, pretty well established. So you don't really have to mess with that. So what they're messing with are the electronics. Same thing with a Tomahawk. You know, rocket, pulse jet, however it's propelled, okay? That's pretty well-known technology. You know, wings, things like that, directional stuff, GPS, that's still pretty conventional. So what they're really doing is they're only adapting the nuclear warhead to be able to dial it up and down, advanced GPS, coordination stuff, EMP protection, things like that. So most of these upgrades, even if you have an older missile hardware, you know, propulsion and casing, things like that, you've still got all the new stuff inside. And so maybe a Tomahawk may be old. An old Tomahawk with an old warhead is old, but an old Tomahawk with a new warhead is a new weapon. So it looks like only the software and the actual wet warhead is what needs to be adapted. But the basic Tomahawk still does a decent job if you have the propulsion, the encasement, the wings, the whatever it is, you know, that makes the missile work, except for the new stuff they need. So
yeah,
I don't see why
I would
a Tomahawk
be happy if they would just.
Yeah,
I would be happy if they would just bring back the old Tomahawk. And I mean, obviously, a new version of the old Tomahawk in terms of the missile itself, a new version, you know, because the old Tomahawk was just too old. I think it's going to be a bridge too far to try to persuade the Biden administration to do what I'm and the congressional Democrats to develop a third generation nuclear warhead for the Slicker-Man, okay? So I'd be happy if they, you know, well, I wouldn't be happy because I have grave doubts about whether that the W-80 will still work, okay? But something is better than nothing. And, you know, so it is good news that that the Democrats in the Senate and the House, you know, on the National Security Committees broke with the Biden administration and openly defied the Biden administration and are supporting the Pentagon on the Slicker-Man. So that's another win for us.
No, it is. But let me ask a couple of questions. Whose congressional district is it made in? Which company is going to make this, or companies are going to make this thing?
I don't. I don't know, and it hasn't gotten to. It's probably going to be Lockheed Martin. You know,
okay.
So that would be California, and I guess Lockheed Martin opened a plant in the South somewhere, North or South Carolina, I think. You know, so
yeah, Lockheed's next to Facebook in Silicon Valley. I used to live there. I was in the Bay Area for 30 years. So Lockheed and Facebook are like neighbors, and Google. They're all in the same park. They all drive Teslas. They all have their charging stations in the parking lots. It's quite fascinating. But so Lockheed would get it. Jet Propulsion, maybe. Who else? General Dynamics, maybe Northrop too. Who else? Raytheon for the guidance and stuff. Then that's Boston.
Yes,
area. Yes. I'm just curious.
I'm sure all the defense contractors will end up getting a piece of it. You know, which is a good thing. They've got to, we've got to bring back our defense industrial base when it comes to nuclear delivery systems.
No, I'm just curious. Are they doing this for the right reasons, national security, or the wrong reasons that it's going to be money in their district? You know, that's the motivation.
Maybe I'm naive. You know, in reality, it's probably there's probably mixed motives, but the national security arguments are so compelling, I think it's more than just the idea that it's going to bring money into certain districts,
Well, I hope so. I'm exploring
for this,
that.
For the party discipline, the party discipline within the Democratic Party, you know, is so rigid. You know, you're dealing with like a Stalinist type party. That it is a remarkable.
Not like it is a Stalinist party.
Chairman and subcommittee chairman and General Miley, you know, himself, you know, going up against Obama on, excuse me, going up against Biden on this.
No, you were right. you were right. You may have misspoken, but we know who's running things. I think you're absolutely right. In fact, you're the only person I let say Biden administration on this show, just out of convenience.
Oh, well,
because,
thanks.
You know, we talk about that so often. No, I don't let anybody else say Biden administration because it's not true. You know, but it's different because, like I say, we have to talk about it so often. If I jumped on you every time you said
it's
it,
sure
would take half the show.
For the illegitimate government that's currently in charge,
uh-huh.
you know,
yeah.
it's just easier to say Biden administration.
Oh, I know.
Maybe I should modify it by calling it the illegitimate Biden administration.
Or the fake. You know, we'll find a term.
You know.
Well, here's another question I have for you, too. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Aircraft carriers. The Navy loves aircraft carriers. They're
but
big.
Before
they're expensive.
We move on.
Finish this one first. Yeah.
Well,
no, go ahead, finish.
There have also been some other interesting developments. In the world that I think have moved this break. In addition to the Ukraine war, where the threat of a tactical nuclear war with Russia is not just some theoretical possibility now, but looms every day, you know, in front of the Congress. And we have no means of deterring it if they decided to do that. You know, there have been other developments that indicate that the – and this will make you happy, okay? But from Washington's perspective, it's really bad news. You know, the breakdown of the globalist world order, okay, that's based on U.S. military power and upholding the – giving security guarantees to other countries, you know, is starting to break down in ways that are very obvious so that you can see it in the headlines. For example, I'm sure you haven't had a time to see them because you've been doing the show, but I sent you this morning a couple of articles.
Well, the two latest ones haven't seen, the one you sent me a couple of days ago I have, especially about the Korea vote
right.
on nuclear weapons. Yeah,
let's
that one
talk about that. You know,
okay,
we've
go
got
for
a
it.
Poll from Korea, from the South Koreans, where 71% of South Koreans want South Korea to develop its own nuclear weapons because they don't trust the U.S. extended nuclear umbrella anymore, you know? And why should they?
Good.
I mean, the only way we have of ensuring South Korean security in a situation, in a nuclear situation, is with our strategic nuclear forces, which we are, you know, you have to be a fool to think that we're going to actually launch ICBMs or sub-launch ballistic missiles, right, as a way of dealing with a tactical nuclear strike from North Korea. So Slick'em N, this is an example of where, you know, you can fill that deterrence gap and have a credible nuclear deterrent that's in the neighborhood all the time, you know, to reassure the South Koreans. But the South Koreans don't trust us anymore because we've allowed our nuclear capabilities to so wither away. So over 70% of the South Korean people want South Korea to go nuclear. And I you think that's a good thing?
No,
I think that's
absolutely
a good thing too. You know, because I think that the era where the United States has to be the world global nuclear policeman, you know, ought to go away. You know, the world has just become too dangerous. It doesn't serve the interests of the average American, you know, to be committing us to getting into a nuclear war that we would probably lose, you know, against these other countries. And deterrence is going to be much more credible if our adversaries, there are even many American analysts in Washington who have advocated, for example, that we give the bomb to Taiwan, for example, or reintroduce
tactics. We talked about that on
the
show.
Korean Peninsula. That's another article I sent you, which was a sign of the before we leave South Korea, here's another big thing that I'm sure Washington got Washington's attention, you know, is the South Korean government has appealed. North Korea is on the verge. We think North Korea is on the verge of doing another nuclear test.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Biden has made all kinds of noise and drawn a line in the sand and threatened Kim Jong-un not to do that. And, of course, you know, that is going to carry no weight at all with North Korea.
Not at all.
And the South Koreans are not assured by the Biden administration. They're not comforted. But the South Koreans have actually asked Moscow and Beijing to stop North Korea from doing the nuclear test. From Washington's perspective, that's enormously alarming because, it, again, is another additional proof that they have no confidence in Washington being able to deliver, you know, on security guarantees in terms of the nuclear threat from North Korea. That kind of the jig is up, that even the South Koreans, in effect, they're saying, you know, we know that the guys that are really in charge here in the Pacific are Russia and China. Mm-hmm. That Russia and China,
well,
that North Korea is basically a client state for North Korea, which is what we've talked about on this show many times. You know, that North Korea is basically a client state. You know, I don't care. You know, it's our security that's at risk. We don't trust the Biden administration in Washington anymore on these assurances that if they're just given enough time, you know, they can make the North Korean nuclear threat go away. So they're talking right to Beijing and making an appeal to Beijing and Moscow. And you know what? Beijing and Moscow just might, you know, that might actually work because it's an opportunity for them to demonstrate to South Korea that South Korea is better off with them as friends than it is with the United States.
And this trading
is how
with them.
Change. This is how you
exchange,
can win a nuclear war, exactly, without actually fighting it. This is what we've been talking about, I think, for a couple of years on your show about how why nuclear weapons are so important and how you can win without war.
Mm-hmm. It's a chess game, yeah. See, I also think Japan should get nuclear weapons. You know, when you consider, and everybody screams and yells, oh, non-proliferation, we can't have more nations getting nuclear weapons. Well, either our enemies have them or we've given them to them. North Korea, China, Russia, Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Iran is going to have nuclear weapons. If these countries have nuclear weapons, why the hell aren't we arming our friends? This makes no sense to me. Australia should have nuclear weapons.
And there are increasing numbers of voices in Japan among senior officials, not from the people. You know, the people in Japan, because of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they've got a strategic culture that's extremely averse to nuclear weapons, which makes it all the more remarkable that senior national security officials are talking about we should get the bomb, too. And they could become a sophisticated nuclear weapons state in a year or two because Japan has got all kinds of nuclear reactors. It's got a huge stockpile of plutonium and uranium, which could be quickly reprocessed into weapons grade. They've got most people don't know it, but Japan has got a sophisticated space program. You know, they could.
Oh, that's interesting.
It would take them a year or two to turn themselves into a significant nuclear weapons state if they wanted to.
Do you think they are? Do you think they are clandestinely, just getting everything else ready?
They're thinking about it. Okay. They're not doing it in public because it's not popular in public, but this is another thing that's kind of been in the headlines lately that is another seismic indicator of a shift in the global balance of power and a change in the world order where – you know, where Japan, which has been one of our staunchest allies, and has gone along with the notion of extended nuclear deterrence, is starting to break with that notion. And at least some senior officials thinking, you know, we can't trust the United States anymore. We've got to go off on our own.
They've got a huge military, from what I understand. I mean, I think I remember reporting on this maybe a couple months ago, but maybe an article you even sent me. But Japan has a sizable military. They're very good at it. I mean, Japan's been a military nation since the samurai for several thousand years. It's not like this is totally alien to their culture. The difference is who they attack and why. You know, World War II seemed to be about resources for a major part of it, you know, capturing the Dutch East Indies where Royal Dutch Shell gets their oil from, you know, and so it was a different kind of thing. But nowadays, you know, as times change and things change, nuclear weapons have changed. You know, you don't see propeller-driven airplanes flying over cities, you know, dropping a nuclear weapon for the sole purpose of killing as many people as possible. That's not the nature of nuclear war now. You know, I mean, every warfare has changed. It's becoming less and less, you know, manned and much more, you know, it's drones instead of fighter aircraft. So it's a completely different thing. So to be against Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which I was, still am, as opposed to a modern tactical, you know, versatile, flexible, dialable, you know, nuclear response is a totally different idea than dropping bombs on cities. And so I think that maybe that's making a difference in people. And the fact that that generation is dying off, you know, those folks, the folks that were there at Hiroshima, you know, are going, and it just becomes, you know, further and further away each year. Maybe all those things are in play.
From North Korea are so extreme that the Japanese simply can't ignore it. I mean, North Korea routinely fires ICBMs over Japan, across their airspace. It fires intermediate-range ballistic missiles into their near-ocean areas, violating their economic and defense zones. And, in fact, the North Korean threat has really started transforming the Japanese military at the conventional level already, because it used to be that in the Japanese Constitution, you know, that their Navy and their Army and the Air Force exist strictly for the defense of the home islands, and that they're not supposed to project power. But they've been changed. North Korea has changed that, and they over the last 5 years, they've been openly not only talking about but trying to acquire capabilities so that they could address a nuclear threat from North Korea, you know, at least with the conventional forces that they have. You know, if they had to do a preemptive strike or something like that. So this is a real sea change in Japan's thinking. And is this a sign, you and I have talked about it in the past,
changing
world order, where we, America, the our superpower extended nuclear deterrence guarantees has withered in a way, you know, so that they're not credible anymore. And the last example, recent example of this, it's another article I sent you, is Taiwan. You know, I think the last time we talked about how some analysts in Washington even have said, well, we should just give Taiwan the bomb. We stopped them from getting the bomb. Taiwan was developing a nuclear capability, and I don't remember which administration. It was maybe the Clinton administration, maybe earlier, but we stopped that. You know, we said, oh, this is going to violate the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And we persuaded the Taiwanese to give up their, not just persuaded them, but really forced them to stop it, you know, because we were their only source of conventional weaponry, you know, for defending their island. And so we threatened to stop that. And so they suspended, we think they suspended their nuclear program. But there's a recent, but Taiwan has come out and said, we have a nuclear-like weapon and has threatened China. Taiwan has threatened China.
Wait. I want this defined, too. I love this because I didn't get a chance to read this part yet. Nuclear-like? What is that?
Yes. It's a sort of a MOAB, a conventional warhead that has a very high yield and can be delivered by a cruise missile. That, you know, probably has a range of a couple of thousand kilometers. And what they did is they said, if you invade Taiwan, we have the capability to attack the, what is it, the Three Gorges or the Six Gorges Dam in China. We'll blow up that dam, and downstream from that dam are millions of Chinese. You know, so we have the ability to inflict something like, you know, a nuclear disaster on you, you know, with this capability that we have, so don't invade us. And this, too, you know, is a sign of, it's the kind of thing that the State Department would never want Taiwan to say. You know, the State Department's position is, keep your mouth shut, don't provoke the Chinese, you know, trust us in our negotiations, we will protect you. we will protect you with our extended deterrence. Well, the Taiwanese obviously don't believe that anymore. And so this, again, is a seismic shock for Washington, you know, that Taiwan would be so bold, you know, as to break ranks with Washington.
Well, they have to.
And make such a
there
threat.
Is no
of course, I agree.
Nuclear umbrella. I agree. It won't open. You know, it doesn't go anywhere. And it's like they're still thinking World War II and the Cold War in the Pentagon, and Taiwan's right there next to China. So here's – we've got a few minutes left. Let me just get one big question here. Are there any alliances, either real or secret, between Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan? Are they working together? Are they doing any kind of military exercises together? Are they talking to each other? What's going on that we don't know about, that you know about?
We've been trying to get them. That has been one of the State Department's objectives, you know, over the decades. The problem is that there's a lot of bad blood between those countries because of,
well, yeah, I know,
you know, Imperial Japan and World War II that they've never been able to really overcome. You know, the North, South Koreans really don't like the Japanese, and the same with the Taiwanese as well. The only there has been cooperation, but it's been led by the United States, and so, you know, I'm not sure that they would cooperate and work with each other if the United States was not in the picture.
Hmm. Maybe it's better they stay separate and just have their spheres of influence of their nation, and they sort of, you know, communicate underground, don't tell us, but, you know, Taiwan takes the area around their, you know, country, and Japan takes the area around their country, and South Korea takes the area around their country, and they sort of make like big circles of, we'll cover this and this and this, and here's where they overlap, kind of thing. Be interesting to see a map. You know, I should take a look at a world map and see exactly how much territory each one would have to cover, you know, and of course Japan would be both sides of their country, you know, especially with North Korea lobbing missiles over their country. Can you imagine if Russia was firing missiles, you know, over between San Francisco and New York and sort of landing, you know, firing them in the Pacific and having them land in the Atlantic? I think we'd object, you know. To,
right. I don't think that.
Well, you know, they have been conducting major naval exercises outside of Hawaii. Joint Russia-China naval and air force exercises. And there was a few years ago when they landed, I think it was an SS-18. They did and launched an ICBM and dumped warheads. You know, they weren't as close as North Korea has put them to Japan. Okay. But
right.
They were close enough for discomfort. They were in international waters, you know, and close enough for discomfort, you know, that they, so they have been engaging in provocative behavior like that. Not as regularly as North Korea threatens Japan and South Korea, of course. But there's enough there that we should be alarmed.
Interesting. Yeah, Pianki had a question, I think.
I don't think that if Taiwan bomb Three Gorges down, it would be the end of that country.
I agree with you. I think the Chinese would turn them into a plate of glass, but it is a measure of the desperation of the Taiwanese that they are willing, that they have, and their lack of faith in the United States, that they have engaged in such desperate threats.
Yeah, but
know?
What would the United States do? The United States can't protect Taiwan. It can't protect Japan either. China has gotten to China is somebody to reckon with. They've gotten it.
I agree. And it's not just China, but it's just very obvious from these exercises, these joint Russian-Chinese exercises, that we would be dealing with both of the superpowers in that theater. And you know, we don't even have the ability to take on one of them. And this is another thing Washington has been in denial behavior about, like an ostrich with its head in the ground, where we just haven't wanted to face up to that reality, you know, that really Russia and China are a working military alliance, and as is North Korea and Iran, and that they're part of that alliance. You know, I think it should have been so obvious to us. I mean, last year there was that Chinese military website, you know, that threatened Japan with a joint nuclear strike by Russia, China, and North Korea, if Japan sent even one soldier to the defense of Taiwan, and that they would destroy Japan and then divide the remnants up among Russia and China to be administered jointly by them. I think that was also a message to us, by the way. They
mentioned
the United States, but you know, I think that's their solution for the U.S. becoming intervened, that they would fight a nuclear war against us and divide us up into administrative units to be run by Russia and China.
Well, that's what the globalists want
to
do.
So, yeah, it's a dangerous situation where, you know, we're threatened from within by our own illegitimate, unconstitutional, you know, tyrants who are – the president himself is probably on the payroll – you know, of China.
What do you mean,
and,
probably? probably?
Yeah, now,
I don't think.
Now wait for me to be arrested, okay? Having said that, and on top of that, we have these, you know, I mean, put that in the context, too, of why in the world would the Biden administration be against this slick of man, right? He's got to be overruled by his own Pentagon and his own Democrats in Congress. You know, this is exactly what Russia and China would want the Biden administration, the illegitimate Biden administration, to do.
There
don't
you
build
go.
A slick of man. Get rid of the B-83.
Make
you know,
it powerless.
He's talking about these things in public, you know, even as we're being threatened with nuclear war, you know, by Russia and China. That's not when you start disarming and, you know,
targeting the ocean.
Attributing it to the stupidity of the anti-nuclear far left, you know, you know, but maybe it's even worse than that. Maybe we really have a Manchurian candidate at the helm in the White House.
Well, no, I see it very simply as that Obama's running the foreign policy and the military, and Hillary Clinton's running the domestic terrorism, the attorney general, and the FBI, KGB. I mean, that's how they've divided up the government. But I've got my next guest on the line who's listening going, what the hell are these people talking about? Anyway, let me leave you with one question I think we can explore next week, unless you have a fairly quick answer right now. We're the only source of nuclear weapons. You know, India is part of that India, Australia, Japan, South Korea kind of pact. Could India supply these nations, South Korea, Taiwan, and Japan, with nuclear weapons, since they already have them?
Well, it's not likely to, you know, because it's a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and India isn't all that friendly to us, you know. India is...
Well, to them it might be. I'm not worried about us. I'm saying to these other countries.
Oh, right. You know, theoretically,
I'm just curious,
but I mean, that's a short answer. We could resume the geopolitical complexities in greater depth next time.
That sounds good. Thank you, sir. As always, it's a wonderful discussion. I really appreciate it. And I will be passing this on to my congressman and various other folks. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye.
Goodbye now. All right, so now let's bring on a new person to Action Radio who is listening going, see, Paige, welcome to Action Radio. You notice we'll go from nuclear war to wellness and spirituality. That's how we do things around here. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm grateful to be here with you today.
Oh, good. Well, good to have you here. And so just to give folks a little break and, you know, take a deep breath, I don't have a theme, obviously. Well, let me give you my. I haven't done this for a while. Let me get my guest of the day theme here, so we make a little transition. Otherwise, folks are going to go, "What the hell just happened there? Where is it? Hang on. I'm scrolling. I see this happens when I have to produce my own show. And now our guest of the day, Paige Ward, the Awakening Oracle. So this is one of those chance, spontaneous, you know, things. I've discovered wellness in a big way here at Action Radio, and I've discovered a whole bunch of things that I find fascinating that I don't know about. And whenever I don't know something about it, I ask somebody who does, and that's how Paige Ward has come to us here. Her website, Facebook page, The Awakening Oracle. I got a ton of questions for her, but the reason I want to do this is because I have so many questions on wellness. I think it's an exploding new field. I think people are desperate to get away from what I call oil medicine. You know, petroleum-based John D. Rockefeller traditional medicine that kills you with remdesivir ventilators and COVID shots. And so that's why you're here. So introduce yourself, take some time, tell us who you are, and then we'll see what's going on. And then I have a gazillion questions for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love answering questions. And I agree wholeheartedly that wellness is on the forefront for all of us as we see that we've taken our power back slowly as a society. And I am, so I'm Paige Ward, and I am actually located here in Pace, Florida, and pretty much grew up here as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm first American born. My
so you're keeping pace? Is that what you're saying? You're keeping pace? Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And,
you can use that on your website. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so my family's from the United Kingdom, and I've always had this
we're from England. Where does the family come from? Oh, do tell me. I'd love to know.
Wales. It's a country on the coast of the United Kingdom.
I know Wales because I've been there.
Castles everywhere, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's surreal. Surreal.
I've been to Cardiff Castle. And actually, I love Wales. Wales is spectacular because, actually, I'll tell you a funny story real quick, just to interrupt, which I tend to do a lot.
Yeah.
I took 3 months in Europe just wandering around. And I had a fabulous time doing that. And one of the places I got the hang of traveling. This is like my last couple of weeks in Europe. And I was in the UK, and I went to Wales because I didn't know much about it. And I ended up at this little town called Mahoncleth. Now I got there at 5 o'clock. The train. I was tired of riding the train, so I said, well, here's a town. Let me hop off here and see what happens, right? Because I was really used to the travel. So I hop off. And, of course, it was a small town. And I said, okay, where do I stay? And they said, well, you want to stay at Aunt B. You know, Aunt B, like, you know, Mayberry, right? So I went to Aunt B, and Aunt B has this great Welsh accent, which I can hardly understand her English. And so I ended up dropping my backpack off there. I said, well, where should I go to dinner? Well, you want to go to a Forrester's pub up the street. And so I don't know, Welsh accent. Anyway, so I go to Forrester's. And, of course, I got this jacket with patches from all over Europe on it, right? And so, and because they knew me as an American the minute I walked in the door. Ah, yeah, come on over here, sit down. And so they bought me beer, and I ended up playing chess with the pub owner's son. He was really good. I mean, he wiped me out like 5 games in a row. It was hysterical. but the Welsh are amazing. And Wales is one of the most underrated tourist places. You know, it's across, depending on which way you come, you can come from Dublin on one side of Ireland or from England on the other side, and by land or by water. But Wales is spectacular. But the funniest part was that I wanted to go hiking up in the mountains. They said, well, let's take this trail and, you know, take a little nap up there. And just, you know, it's really nice. You'll be up there in the hills and the heather and the all that kind of stuff. And they guided me to this trail. So I walk up this trail, and it's a really nice valley. Okay. So I'm like sitting there, like I'm sort of like drowsy, and I'm about to go to sleep. And all of a sudden the roar of like 15 jets comes through. This is the main training route for NATO. They didn't tell me, right? And so they thought they were funny. So I get back and you didn't tell me this is the NATO training area, folks. So all of a sudden these jets are, and you've seen it on YouTube now, right? This is before YouTube, right? So these jets are blasting down this valley at 600 miles an hour, and they're twisting and turning, you know, like they did in Top Gun. But this is, and anybody looks up the Welsh NATO training route, this is where I was, right? I didn't know. Pictures of my feet, you know, my sneakers that are totally sullen with all of European soil and dirt and city streets and who knows what else is on them, right? And so I'm taking a picture, and all of a sudden, like right after that, these jets just come roaring by. It was hysterical. So anyway, this is my tribute to Wales. I love Wales. Have you been?
That's amazing.
Have you been?
No, I haven't yet. I'm supposed to go next year. So
you need to go. Yeah.
That will be, it'll be like
okay.
A renunciation of
can you
my
call
ancestry,
us from there?
You know?
We have a Skype line. You need to call us from Wales. You do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. See all the fun we have here?
Yeah.
Nuclear war to Wales to you know, wellness. This is hysterical. I love it. This is why I love my show.
Yeah.
We have such a good time here. Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So anyway, back to you. Sorry for interrupting, but I couldn't resist. How did you get into this, and what do you do? And tell me Awakening Oracle, awaken us, please.
So we can talk about the awakening per se, but I had my quote unquote awakening when I was 19 years old, and I had fully surrendered to God, Creator, whatever your faith resonates with, and came down the path of energy work and energy reading and spirituality. And never, you know, growing up, my grandmother, she was open to it, being from Wales, and would give me crystals and would talk about, you know, psychic phenomena and things like that. But I always thought she was crazy, to be honest with you. And I was growing up in America, I lived in this culture. I had no idea.
Yeah, we deal in reality,
you know, and then growing,
none of that spiritual nonsense for us. We are reality. We want to measure it. We want to quantify
it.
We want to see the results.
Exactly.
I want to see the bottom line. This is America. Believe me, I understand.
Absolutely. And so it was just kind of one of those things where once I realized, I was like, oh, this has been a part of me all along. And so from what I dove in head first and have kind of basically gone full circle. Not saying that I'm not teachable, because there's always something more to learn, but
so you're crazy now too,
equilibrium.
Is what you're saying, right? You're crazy now too?
Say that again.
Like your grandmother?
Yes, I am. And
good.
That's okay. So we all are nowadays.
Yeah. I think we have to be. Well, actually, crazy people that are more sane in a sane world that's now crazy. You know, to me, crazy. I want to talk about this too. The stress that people are under. You know, the family, the mortgage, the marriage, the divorces, the everything from commuting to vaccine shots to the economy to the price of gas. We're in an overstressed society. And the hardest thing I think people are trying to do is to stay normal of what they think is normal, of what they think society thinks is normal for them. And this obsession with being normal is causing absolute stress. So the only people that are really sane are the crazy people that don't care anymore. We're doing exactly what we want. We talk about crystals and aromapathy and wellness. And here I have you on the show because not only are you a healing person, a modern, you know, dealing with all these different things, yoga and everything else, but you're also, you know, a psychic and an astrologer. And I want to see how those worlds have crossed. And so where because we draw on everything. You know, I'm just as spiritual as I am a believer in God, as I am, you know, I see nature when I go for bike ride and the bunnies and bunnies with me and the dragonflies fly with me. And it's the weirdest thing. I'll be there by myself. I can't tell anybody because no one's there. But they only do it when no one's there. So why are the rabbits running with me beside me on the bike trail? Why are the dragonflies flying beside my face? And I look and there they are. Okay, hi, guys. You know, why is that happening? I can't tell you, except that I'm connected to that world. I feel every bit as connected to that world as I do this other world. But the people, it's almost like people in being connected to what they think of as the normal world are completely disconnected from their own selves, their own spirituality, the earth itself, and religion and God. And there's a connection between the earth and God, and all these, we're all connected. And I think that the society has completely missed that. And as these people are trying to be normal, they're killing themselves.
Mm. I agree wholeheartedly.
I don't know where that came from. That just came out.
No, but that's it. I mean, that's it. It's like being able to tap into, like, you know, our channel, our central channel, our soul self of, like, truth, you know? And, I mean, we were never meant to be as fast-paced as a society as we are, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, hence the fast food joints and, you know, that are, you know, secretly harming your being slowly. And then there's, you know, the cortisol levels being so high in people because of stress and, like, stress being the number one killer in America. And, you know, my family came here, you know, so excited for the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they, you know, they came through the Navy, but they still came, like, so excited to come experience America. And my dad, he was, you know, 15 years old and, like, you know, my grandmother was a young mother and, like, they came here and they're just so excited. And then they, you know, they end up disconnecting from their intuition and they end up, you know, gaining weight and they end up, you know, and not that America is not a beautiful place, but the program of the societal norm of the, mm-hmm. of what it means to be free is not actually freedom to me. And so,
yeah, I found that out too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, freedom is in the hands of each person, you know, mm-hmm. and when I received the title, The Awakening Oracle, it had been 6 years into my journey of, like, really dedicating to, like, what is my mission here? Like, whatever humanity needs at this time to assist them, because I can see the suffering. I can see the masks that people wear. I can see through these layers. And I feel that everyone deserves to have their own torch lit. Like, if I'm sitting in a cave and I'm holding the torch and there's a line and you come in and I show you how to light your own torch so that mm-hmm. that way you can be sovereign in your own being and connect to your soul. And, like, science has shown that the soul literally has weight. Like, they've done studies where, like, they, when the being dies, it's not just the, you know, the bowels moving. No, like, the soul has actual weight. So I think it was like 0.7 grams or 7 grams or something like that. And I was just like, I mean, that is amazing to me. And this comes back to that whole, the wellness side of, like, energy medicine and frequency medicine and mm-hmm. the subtle realms or the ether that most people aren't considering, but they tap into, you know, we'll say Christianity. Like, every time you pray, you're connecting to the ether, you know, and you're connecting to this vast source of what I call the Akashic Records, you know.
What are those?
Calling in.
How do you spell that, and what are those? You mentioned those on your site. I wanted to ask you about that. What are Akashic Records?
The Akashic Records. It is AKASHIC, Akashic, and then records. And so this is basically an etheric filing cabinet, per se. And so this is a living library of everything your soul has ever experienced. And everybody can access it. Everybody can access it. It's just about, you know, taking the time to even be present enough to tap in such a way. And
well,
so
how's it different,
everything
how's it different from your memory?
Well, so in some ways it's the same thing, and in other ways it is the next dimension of memory. Like you can tap into the Akashic Records and tune into past lives, future timelines. I mean,
so it's more than just your experience, then. It's your connected experience to other people, then.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So that is my favorite line of work is helping, like going into the Akash and sharing with people. A lot of times what comes through is, you know, your loved ones that have transitioned sharing messages. And then the depiction, which everything's symbology, all of it is symbolic. And so I'm able to see, I'm a clairvoyant. And so I'm able to see what's occurring. And then your soul will appear in a certain form, depending on where you're at. And is able to kind of show me the different sections of your life. And some, I mean, and I'm blown away every single time because everybody's so unique and so different, and where they're at on their path is so different. So it meets someone exactly where they're at, whether you're, you know, a psychic or a basketball player, you know, so it's like,
No, interesting. Yeah, no, keep going.
Yeah, so, I mean, but, you know, so something I've noticed over the last 2 years is that, like, when we put work, mortgage, kids, all of these things, fears about COVID, fears about vaccines, fears about all this stuff, if we put all of this before our faith, we will live in a state of chaos internally. And I'm not saying, like, you know, I understand the purpose of people like not having a faith. Some of those people are some of the most brilliant scientists. And if they were to have that connection, then maybe they wouldn't discover what they need to discover. So the balance of everything. But
not necessarily. You know, I think of Einstein, who the more he learned, the more he discovered, the closer, the stronger his belief in God, because he saw the interconnections and everything and realized that it couldn't have possibly been an accident. And so I look at this too as the intelligent design. You know, why do we have, and I've talked about this on different shows, why did we discover or create the internal combustion engine at a time when we had low carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and needed to replace the carbon dioxide that had been locked up in plants and then buried underground, so-called fossil fuels? You know, do you think that's an accident?
Right.
I don't. You know, why does the earth make oil and where did it all go? So if we weren't, why did God create oil if not for us to complete the carbon cycle? You know, and what else does it do? You know, it doesn't fertilize, it doesn't do all kinds of things. But once we take it and refine it and do things with it, you know, amazing things happen. But yet there it is. Okay. So it's not necessary for the earth to have oil. It's necessary for us. You know, when you think about it, so why is it there? Okay, because it does complete the carbon chain. So when you burn oil, petroleum products, you release carbon dioxide and water, you know, and both are things that plants need to breathe. That's not a coincidence, I don't think. You know, some other noxious chemicals in there too, you know, but what I'm saying is that no one ever considers that angle. You don't look for the cycle. You don't look for the completeness. You don't look for all these different things as people are living in this totally separate, isolated, crazy world. And I just, they're not making connections that I think that the wellness folks are making compared to the oil government doctors. You know, it's a fascinating thing that I have noticed. We have our world's greatest doctor panel. You know, if you know the COVID doctors, Mikowitz, Thorpe, Marble, Artis, they're all on my show on Thursdays. It's mostly John Cullen, the guy that created the COVID data map for Johns Hopkins University. All right. We have some of the most brilliant people in the country on every Thursday. And the one thing they all have is a belief in God. Okay. I've noticed this. The doctor that was just critically injured in the small airplane accident, you know, has a strong belief in God. You know, all the doctors that are treating people independently, that are defying the government, that are doing the right thing because that's what they believe in, because they believe in themselves and they believe there are powers higher than government. Those are the doctors that are being gone after. And it almost looks like there's a persecution of doctors who are not, you know, basically health Nazis, you know, kowtowing to Dr. Fascist, as I call him. You know who I'm talking about, right? Dr. Fauci?
Yes, yes.
So, you know, his title is the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, compulsively lying vaccine drug pusher. That's what I call him.
Yes.
And so
people, like the separation of people who have reverence for the higher being, and then people who are trying to be that.
Yeah, Exactly. So
you know
if
what
you
I
divide,
mean?
Yeah, I do. That's why I'm bringing the point up. But the thing is, if you take the doctors that believe in independence and believe in spirituality and believe in wellness and don't, you know, kowtow to the oil medicine Rockefeller Western model and don't follow Dr. Fascist's recommendations that they know are killing people, it's like they're separating all those doctors out. Any doctor that holds God higher than government is being separated out of the system and persecuted and trying to have the licenses removed, revoked. And that's, I don't know if that was an intentional part of COVID, but it seems to me a very, very interesting component of COVID is that the doctors that are, you know, as so against what the government's doing are the same doctors that have a strong belief in God. And I don't think that's an accident. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, okay.
I don't either. I mean, I feel like the whole, and so going into that, I felt like we were going to go into that as I was praying before we got on the call. And I was just like, you know, all of it was very intentional. And I mean, the, you know, people talk about World War III and this, that, and the other, and the World War III is spiritual warfare.
Hmm.
I mean, that's what we're going through.
That's
and so, you know, if we think about the gifts of technology, they're also a form of, like, manipulation, right? There's a U.S. patent that shows that the TV, you know, TVs are meant to hypnotize you. And so it's just one of those things where I noticed that if you are still in your own box and you're not willing to step out of your own box, you're not even going to realize that you're in an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Matrix.
And if you're in fear,
that's why the Matrix
well,
is
Matrix,
favorite film.
Exactly. Yeah. Me too. And it's so symbolic because
I've always been
once
red-pill.
You choose love and once you choose truth, you see everything different. And I just feel like we are needing, you know, at this time, like more people coming into Christed consciousness, which is stepping out of the egoic mind that thinks they have control and dropping down into the heart and actually feeling your way through this reality because we're here and we're meant to be here or you wouldn't be here. There's a lineup of souls waiting to be on the earth. So it's one of those things where we think it's so terrible, but it's like, no, that's just the frequency that you're residing at. So of course you're going to see it terrible. I'm not saying that some of the stuff that's happening isn't treacherous, but thank God that there is truth coming to the surface and that it's not being hidden away from us anymore.
Yeah. It's like crisis breeds innovation. It's like, because we're in basically facing a tyranny of all kinds of things, you know, that whether it's nuclear war, whether it's, you know, medical holocaust that's going on now with COVID or anything else. We were talking with Josie earlier and we were sort of actually laughing tragically at the fact that Canada has opened up its borders for women to go up there for abortions. But yet they have to have a COVID vaccine before they come into the country. Now think about that for a second. Okay. I want you to think about that. Right? This is like today's ultimate irony. So come to Canada for an abortion so your kid can get killed. And in the process, we're going to kill you too, possibly with a COVID shot.
Yeah.
You know, and even if you change your mind about the abortion, decide to go back, you know, your kid still has a COVID shot through you. So nothing good is coming out of this. This is, you know, but the irony of that, you know, come up for a clean and safe abortion. In the meantime, get a COVID shot first. It just, and if that doesn't shock people, if you don't see the irony in that, you're just not paying attention.
No.
This kind of stuff is everything.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, and eventually we're all like, I mean, I've gone to some of the events that like Dr. Mikovich and Dr. Thorpe have been at. And like, I mean, they show the technology of like the nanobots in every single vaccine. Like it's blatant. And so I think of that whole transhumanism thing. And it's so like, are you going to be artificial or are you going to be natural? What are you going to choose? You know? And it's like the fact that that's kind of even a doorway, it trips me out. And then I think of like the shift in consciousness that's happening where like we're able to retain information. We have more connection to our faith. We have more, you know, our bandwidth has expanded. And so
explain all that in terms of the folks understand, you know, are we able to use our brains better than we used to? Are we, you know, what is our frequency and are people, you know, literally vibrating at different levels or different levels on the electromagnetic spectrum? I want to make some connections here so that people, you know, sort of understand and can sort of catch up that don't have the same knowledge that you have and want to understand what you're explaining.
Absolutely. So the Mayan calendar showed that in 2012, it was the end of the calendar. Like that was the end of the cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what really it was the end of a cycle and a new beginning occurring. So if we were to think that before 2012, you could predict someone's future. You could, it was much more, we'll say like the Matrix. And then when 2012 hit, there was this huge shift of polarity because we're coming into what is known as the golden age. And so what is this? This is about fifth dimensional consciousness. What is fifth dimensional consciousness? It's the frequency of love. It's the frequency of what Jesus came and shared with the planet that said, you can do what I do and greater things you will do. And so, you know, this consciousness that's happening, it's based on, again, not necessarily just thought. It's based on that feeling. And so if you were to think about where your awareness is as you're speaking, like feeling into where your being is, you can just feel it by literally breathing into your heart and knowing that you're there. And so what's happening to people that I'm noticing is that third dimensional consciousness is fear. It's fear.
Oh,
and so
the
big zoomed out picture is whatever spiritual energetics from, we could say, a darker force are doing whatever they can to keep the people in fear. Because if they come into love,
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You can control the people that are in fear.
Mm-hmm. You can't control the people that are in love. Well, fear is internal. Love is external. I mean, you can love yourself as a start, but the whole point of love is to be external, to connect with other people through love. You know, whether it's spiritual or, you know.
And to know that it's not even your love. It's not even your love. It is the love of God. It's the love of the universe.
Yeah.
It's what we were created from.
So what's the fourth dimension? What's the connection between the two?
That is actually more connected to thought, the astral realm. So if you were to, like, go into your mind and I'm just going to give an example. Someone does you wrong. Right. It could be something simple. They do you wrong. And in your head, you start judging them, belittling them. You're visualizing this whole thing. And on another frequency,
payback.
Yeah. Something like that. And so now you're on this place of creating something that didn't even need to happen. And you're affecting that person without even realizing you're affecting that person. So the astral is where you can just create anything within yourself, destroy it, whatever. And so people like psychics in the spiritual community, they get stuck there because it's like you can just do whatever you want. You can just conjure anything up. And so that's not the whole point. it's like we have to bridge our creation through our heart space, which is why these doctors that are making these big changes, maybe they're not highlighted on Fox News, but they are making these ripple effects in the time-space continuum because they're choosing love through their work instead of choosing that frequency of, oh, we're going to just do this for money, right? You know, we're going to make them afraid and then we'll do this for money. And I'm not against money. We all need money here.
No,
but,
I don't money.
You know, like,
you know, as long as you make a good product, you do it honorably. And I mean, I intend for Action Radio to make a whole bunch of money because I want to buy a jet. You know, I want to know the ultimate freedom. I want to fly upside down at 500 miles an hour. I want to know what it feels like to be a truly free human being flying a jet. Okay. Nothing wrong with that. That takes profit. Okay. Let me ask you a question. Psychically, what do you see in terms of Action Radio, the creation of a citizen legislature, the ability to empower anybody with enough creativity and energy to put together and work on a bill as we do here creatively and as a team that may end up on the desk of the real president other than the bozo that's there right now. But we're actually a transit point, you know, where people can transition from an idea to an actual bill on the desk of a president. How does that fit into the space-time continuum?
I feel like that is part of the creation of a new way of being, is bringing the power back to the people, because a lot of people my age believe that our vote doesn't matter.
A lot of people my age do. I understand. we saw what happened in the last election.
Right.
But I think for different reasons.
The Electoral College and all of those things, like it does feel that way. But when it comes to the smaller, close-knit, like state-wise, our votes do matter. Like the states where you live, like, if you don't like what a state's doing, go to another state, right? Like,
I did. Like, yeah, I did. I came here from California 5 years ago. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Right. So, I mean, unfortunately, this is just, and so zooming out, you talk about astrologer. I'm not technically an astrologer, but I resonate with the messages of the stars because you can see them every night, right? And right now, the United States of America is in what is known as their Pluto return. Pluto is the subconscious hidden aspects of the psyche. And so, you know, America was not founded on love. America was obviously, we're not even going to go into that. Like, America was founded over control, and we found this land, and now it's ours, and let's not give service to the indigenous that are here. You know, there was a lot of
manipulation. We have to talk, you and I. We're going to be doing a reading of the Declaration of Independence, and that's a separate chapter. Yeah. See, I see it a little differently,
now,
but that's, but I understand what I understand why you say what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So everything we're reaping what we've sown over the last, we'll even say the last 100 years of manipulation, right? Mm-hmm. And so everything that has been hidden and subconscious is coming forward. And so people are thinking, oh, this is doomsday. And it's like, no, this is just, we have to see what's not working so that we can, again, bring the power back to the people, the true American people, not some influential society that we don't even, 200 beings that we don't even know who they are.
Yeah, the elites. Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, exactly. The elites. And like, I pray for them that they find their soul. But they
have one
their
now.
Own, yes, I mean, they have their own, like, program. They're part of it. They're part of all of us coming back and finding our soul. Like, that's the point of coming here. You drop into the earth and you completely forget who you are. Nobody knows who they are until, and then you're told who you are. From a very young age, you're meant to go to school and go to college and do this thing. And if you don't do this thing, then you're not normal. And so it's like, you know, these children that are coming in against the grain too. They're coming in highly sensitive.
No, I was one of those kids. I was always against, I never, and I grew up in three different countries. You want to talk about not fitting in. But something, I just want to get to one thing real quickly, because I thought about this the other day. We always talk about, you know, blacks in America being slaves as being totally oppressed. But people forget that the white Americans were colonists. They were under a British colony. You know, which can be, it's not as oppressive as slavery, but it's still oppressive in many ways. There's no freedom when you're a colonist. You know, look at India under the British. Look at, in fact, anybody under the British. Look at anybody under any colonial power. You know, there's no freedom in there. And so people forget that this country was, you know, everybody was subject to the British nation for a lot of our history. Now, granted, we got independence, you know, in the 1700s, and slavery wasn't ended until the 1800s. And that is a tragedy. But to think that this country wasn't founded, you know, didn't begin as oppression from another country is to miss the point of what really happened here. And so I think that spirit of freedom has given this country the best chance, if we actually use that, to now gain spiritual freedom. You know, that when Americans say we're the freest country on earth, well, you haven't been around much. You haven't been to other places. You know, you haven't traveled. And because Americans, for the most part, haven't traveled to other countries, they don't see the freedoms that they don't have here. And so if you and I, coming at this from completely different angles, ages, generations, and everything else, can start looking at freedom in terms of spiritual freedom, in terms of intellectual freedom. These are all freedoms in terms of academic freedom, in terms of family freedom, in terms of all the educational freedom to not be in a government school, medical freedom to not have to go to a government health Nazi, doctor fascist doctor and get a COVID jab and get massive blood clots like they're finding out now. It's kind of strange that the medical profession dominated by government is actually probably your worst health enemy.
Right.
and here we are. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. So this is what I'm saying. Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. And like, you know, just, you know, being part of the vision of new systems, right? Like, me and you are part of the vision of new systems, new ways of being. We're doing our best to create these new systems. And so a lot of the information that is needed to create these new systems is being dropped into people that are not who you'd expect, ultimately. You know, like, they're not some monk sitting on a mountain not doing anything. No, these are physical people here, you know, buying the properties to create, you know, organic foods for society, local people who are raising grass-fed cows, you know, instead of Beyond Burger filled with soybeans and GMOs, right? And so
well,
it's like
dangerous. People forget soy is dangerous to men. Men, trust me, soy has plant estrogens. Men, you don't need estrogen, okay? Stop eating soy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. And so there's like this, like we talked, like I said, like this artificial and this natural timeline. And so what I've come to accept is that, like, the earth is meant we're meant to see the duality of the planet right now. Like, it's very extreme, the duality that's happening. You know, half of the people are like, ooh, let's get a chip in our brain, and the other half are like, no, the technology is within you already. Like, you already have everything you need. So it's like, for some people it's frightening, but to me it's like, you can't play God forever. God will intervene. And then there's like the global warming side of it, you know, where it's like, oh, we're destroying the earth. We couldn't destroy the earth if we wanted to. The earth is her own being. And if she doesn't want us here, she will end us. I mean,
exactly. We would destroy ourselves before we destroy the earth. It was George Carlin.
That's what she doesn't want to happen.
Yeah, George Carlin has some fabulous things on that in terms of, look at all, you know, more species have become extinct than existed by orders of magnitude. You know, the earth selects. We've had ice ages. We've had, you know, really hot periods. We've had all this different stuff, and the earth's still here. You know, we've only been here. How far back does recorded history go? What, 7,000-8,000 years? That's nothing. That's like, you know, in God's eyes, that's, you know, 5 minutes ago, if that.
Exactly. You know? It's a blink.
So
it's a blink.
You put this in perspective. We're not that important. Now, that doesn't mean we can't do important things, you know, because there's two answers.
What's crazy is that's what people believe, though, Greg, is that we're not important because we're so small. And the only reason that people like me have volunteered to be here is because what humanity was going through and was experiencing was affecting the entire universe, because they weren't. We've already had highly advanced spiritual technologies as humans. We just ruined it because we came into power and greed. We didn't choose to stay in our heart because we forgot who we were. And so then that's when we became more animalistic, until Christ came and gave this new example. And then they looked at him and killed him anyway because he was too advanced for them, right? Like, so it's like this whole thing where now the Christ is coming alive in people. It's coming online. And it's going to look different for everyone. That doesn't mean we're going to walk around and just start healing blind people all the time. But this means that we're going to live by a new example, a new way of existing, a new way of working, you know, coming more into present time and enjoying the micro moments of life and not always looking for the next destination or the next stressor or the next fear. And, you know,
well, I do both, though.
Connection.
But I do both. I look ahead. I see myself in my 1967 Pontiac Firebird driving down to the beach. You know, I see myself in my jet whipping along, you know, upside down at 500 miles an hour. I've already visualized these things in such incredible detail. I've actually, in my mind, I've already done them. Okay. So those things are going
to
happen.
And so you're tuning in to another timeline where a version of you is already doing that.
Oh, that's interesting.
And guess what? When you look at that timeline, do you feel hatred and fear? No, you feel excited. You're like, yeah, I can't wait. You know,
it's exhilaration. Well, I'll take you up in the jet when I get it, and you can see what it's like to be upside down at 500 miles an hour. You know, and it's great. Yeah. In fact, I want to do a whole episode of Action Radio upside down. I want to find a way to rig up the microphone and the whole bit.
Oh my God.
You know, but this is what I think about, okay? So to me, the world is, and I think people can really be divided into limitations and possibilities, okay? See, I see the world as nothing but possibilities. You know, will I get to all of them? Probably not. Am I going to try? Absolutely. You know, do I care if I don't get to everything? No. You know, but it's the struggle, the ambition, the trying, the doing things that have never been done before, and it's living completely without fear. You know, I think for the most part, except for obvious things like, you know, bears chasing me and trees falling on me, I pretty much live my life without fear. you know, I mean, but things can generate fear, but I'm not at in a state of fear. And I think most people are in a state of fear. That it's
yes.
just
and then
the,
they wonder why they attract what they're afraid of.
Oh,
you know?
Okay. Explain
like
that
it's,
one.
It's like, so, you know, emotions are energy. Emotion is energy in motion. And so doctors like Dr. Joe Dispenza have been doing years of research now showing that, like, let's say your intention is your firebird, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, how would the firebird make me feel? And you make this list. Well, when you start feeling those feelings now, regardless mm-hmm. of what's mm-hmm. happening, you start to magnetize more of what's in alignment with that feeling. Because really, you don't even want the jet based on the jet. You want the feeling that the jet gives you. Right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Like that's what,
and I want to share it too. And I don't want to be the only one there.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's a two-seater, not a one-seater. So yeah, I want to be able to, but I want to be able to teach people how to fly a jet, even though I haven't figured it out myself yet. But yeah. And with the Firebird, I not only hear the sound of the engine, I can smell the gasoline. I can smell the leather.
Right.
I can smell the, I can feel the leather, you know, and I can, the wood grain, if I can get a wood grain steering wheel. I mean, all these, I can visualize these as clearly, they are absolutely real to me. I'm right there right now, by the way. I'm driving down the beach. You don't see me, but I'm actually driving down the beach in my cobalt
so
blue Firebird
you see
the
power
with the white top.
Of your mind right now. How
yeah.
your mind can create this experience. Think about all the people that every night when they come home from work, they sit in front of the TV and watch the news.
Oh, but I watch the news too. But it serves a purpose
now,
for me.
But you're aware of yourself though. You're aware
okay.
of what you're doing. You're using it as research. These people aren't even really thinking about what they're doing.
So
but
they're
every
disconnected?
Time they go, and maybe this is for you too. I don't know. I can't speak for you. But every time we go
oh,
and we tap into that field, we feel mm-hmm. the emotions that they're wanting us to feel from that. So sure, we keep magnetizing it. We keep recreating it over
huh.
and over and over again.
So it's interesting that news is as much of a controlling thing by what they do report and what they don't report. You know, it's a very interesting thing. I find news fascinating just for the not only see what they're reporting, but how they're reporting, and again, what they're not reporting. And so it's interesting to know what's going on. But I see news as a puzzle. So they give me some of the pieces, and then I have to go find the rest of them. Okay, and this is what we talk about
right.
things on the show, and this is why we speculate on the show, because we don't have all the answers. But that's not the point. Sometimes, it's, you know, the old Kung Fu saying, you know, sometimes it's better to ask the right questions. And so you'll never find the answers until you ask the right questions. Most of the stories that I post, you know, on Facebook for the show are because I've asked a question, not because I've heard it on the news. I want to know. And someone else has thought the same thing. And there's a whole article, you know, research, and I go, yeah, that's what I was thinking about. And that's how topics end up on the show. So news should serve you. You should not serve the news. Does that make sense?
Right. Right. Okay. Right. Absolutely. And someone could say that about anything, right? But like, that's just the most influential thing that I've noticed lately is like how much, you know, I mean, example A, my neighbor, she is wheelchair bound. She stays in her home and she doesn't leave. And so the other day I was outside and I walk out and I'm like in my garden watering my stuff. And she said, "Hey, Paige." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she said, "Be careful out there." I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "The COVID." I was like, oh, my
what,
God.
What, in your garden?
You know, like,
yeah, that's really scary. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
What was the first thing that Dr. Fascist did?
I have so much compassion for her, though, because she just doesn't know. Like,
yeah,
she just doesn't really actually know.
Has
and
she been boosted several times? I mean, is she danger of blood clots and everything
knows?
Else? Yeah.
Who knows?
And that's why I don't mention names.
I don't connect too deep.
Yeah. But... well, but this is fascinating that she said that. No, but it is. And what's the first thing that Dr. Fascist did? He made everybody stay home to the governors.
Right.
Well, staying home creates fear because it creates isolation. So you're not connected to your
exactly.
fellow people. You're not talking to them. And what's the next thing that happened? Well, the internet was basically shut down of good information. It was stripped from the internet and social
yep.
media was clamped down. Isolation.
Yep.
Isolation breeds fear. You know, you couldn't go to your job. So you couldn't earn a living. So now not only you've got fear, you've got insecurity over your finances. And then businesses
yeah.
were lost. And then families couldn't meet on holidays. They couldn't go to church. Was that the fault of the government? No, it was the fault of the churches. They should have stood up against them, but they didn't. It was
no.
a bunch of wimps.
They wanted the, yeah, exactly. And so this
you know?
Is another, yeah, this is the point that we're at is where we're getting to the lowest of low. And it's mm-hmm. like from that point, where do you go? You can only go up. Like I know that this is a, even I don't know how long. So if we're talking about psychic phenomena, just before the election, you know, it was Trump and Biden. And I'm not someone I'm learning about the truth of what is. I was not. I'm more like, OK, who is integral and who is not? Right. Mm-hmm. And so really, I was like, all right, what is the highest timeline for humanity? What will most serve humanity? What does that look like? And the timeline I was shown was the first one, that if Trump won the election, there would be a huge uproar. It would be like an 8-month cycle to like a culmination of whatever this new beginning is. With mm-hmm. Joe Biden, it is a slower, drawn out cycle where it's like little
like
micro
torture.
Moments piling up.
It's kind of like endless torture.
Yes.
You know, they just find new ways to
torture. It is.
Yeah.
It is. And
yeah.
Honestly, I guess this is what we needed to find
Why?
Our truth again, to find our power again.
Okay.
Because ultimately, I think humans are stubborn, and a lot of them need deep suffering to awaken.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I remember when things were really good in the Trump administration, as opposed to the Biden insurrection. And I remember back 2017, 2018, not so much 2019, but I mean 2017, 2018, when things were really starting to go well. The price of fuel was down. The economy was great. Jobs were coming in. People were happy. For the first time, I saw Americans were happy. I like when I see Americans that are happy. And I thought, you know what? I'm really going to enjoy this because it could be taken away from us at any time. And I thought that, and I didn't realize it at the time, because I thought, Trump's got 2 terms. How could anything happen? This guy's the most popular president we've had since, Lincoln? You know, or some of the other folks. But in the back of my mind was this little voice saying, you know what? Enjoy it. Enjoy every single day. And I did. I really did enjoy it. I mean, I came out here in 2017. You know, I started my radio show until the station was bought out. But that's how I found Blog Talk. But I enjoyed it very much because I really sort of like relished and enjoyed and just dove into every single day. I said, this is great. I've got low fuel. I can go driving. I can go visit places. I can do stuff. America's a free country again and people are happy. I said, but this can go. And I didn't realize it. Then COVID and then the Brandon coup, the treason that replaced our government, where the government chose the government instead of the people choosing the government. So my question to you is, A, what do you think of that? And B, why was it necessary to take away the good times again?
Well, this is like coming back to that whole there's so many sides to this, Greg, and I feel like we could talk about this forever, but to make it short.
Well, you're
going to
come back. I mean, you're going to be back on the show. Don't worry about it. I've already decided that.
Yes. So,
you can tell me too, but
basically, this is coming back to that whole fear versus love. Like, there are only two true frequencies on the planet, and it's fear or love. Now, there's a whole array of connections to both of those, of course.
Are they yin and yang?
But that is,
are they interconnected, or are they separate?
Well, you know, I think they're connected, but also separate. And because
well, that covers
like
all the bases. That was safe.
Yeah.
You.
And
you're
so if we were like so, like let's say everybody was we'll say mass majority of people were terrified that Joe Biden was going to win and Trump was going to lose. Well, we attract what we fear, ultimately. And so, you know, I mean, but I zoom out even more than that. I zoom out way more to like this eagle's eye point of view where like, this is what we required to come back in to our, to the people having the power. There are more people conscious in America than ever before, but it will not be highlighted on mass media. The awakening will not be highlighted on the media. And so this is a DNA thing. This is like, if we could imagine that our DNA had time capsules, people's time capsules are opening up and they're remembering who they are. They're remembering that they're more than just Greg or just Paige, but the reverence of getting to be Paige, of getting to be Greg and have this experience and this life. Because over the last 7 years, I have just been on this deep discovery of like, why are we even here? If all of this stuff is so crazy, why are we even here? And we were meant to come have an experience. We were meant to come be aligned with our genius. What is our genius? Our genius is what brings us the highest joy. And, you know, like when we think of like, I mean, to me, when I think of God, I don't think of some man who's telling me what's right and what's wrong. It's more so like, ooh, what part of, like, what lights you up? Maybe it's basket weaving. Maybe it's, for me, like, I love supporting people and finding their soul and finding their truth and stepping forward through the veils of illusion. And so, you know, for you, you're like, I want to be able to connect with beings who are making these great changes and have information for the public. Like, so it's like, and it lights you up. I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah,
so
it does.
That's
it really
what we
does.
Were meant
yeah.
to be doing.
Yeah. Well, I was meant to be doing this because every time I tried to do something else, you know, God kind of took it away. No, Greg, have I got your path? You'll see later. But, you know, because I had to live, you know, 40 years before I got here, which is kind of interesting. I have a caller. I don't recognize the number. So this is obviously a new caller. So I'm going to bring him on. And so when you hear unmute, that's you, my local caller. First name, where you're calling from. If you're a public figure, you can give your last name too, but otherwise, just come join us. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello. Yeah, you. All right, let me mute them again and unmute them again so they'll hear it on their line. So here's the unmute. And, I mean, that's the mute. And I'm going to unmute your line again and give you a talk. So you there. Now's your chance. Yeah, welcome to the show. Hello? Well, I guess they just want to listen. Okay. That happens too. Folks, if you want to talk to the show, call it. If you want to listen to the show, just go to blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And that way you can listen online. And but this show's for callers. So if you want to hear the show, listen. If you want to call the show, then call in. I'm more than happy to put you on the air. All right. So back to our where we were. Actually, you know what? Now I'll play it at the end of the show. A couple of things I'm supposed to play during the show, but we've been so busy today. It's been too crazy to do that. Fear and love. With thought in the middle, if the third generation is fear, third dimension is fear, the fourth dimension is thought, and the fifth dimension is love, you really need to go through from fear through thought, which brings about rational and controls fear before you can get to love, which is the expansion of thought. How's that?
It's like, yes, it's like taking an elevator down, you know, if we were to think about it like that. But it's multifaceted. It's very multifaceted. And so I think that for me, I was able to step out of it because of suffering. But I don't want people to have to suffer to find their truth. I don't think people have to suffer. And I think we have agreed to suffering for so long subconsciously because of, you know, our genetics of like times of famine, times of, you know, poverty, times of all these things. And then we're entering into this timeline again where it feels like the Great Depression, you know, where we're like, I mean, I just know people who they're like literally barely surviving and they're grateful that they're surviving, but they're barely making it. And my understanding is that, you know, limitless reality, like a limitless potential where we should all have more than enough. We shouldn't be in this state of being that catalyzes us in fear. But how do we crack the matrix, like you said? Like, how do we actually crack our own matrix? Because the matrix isn't the earth. The matrix is an internal program that people have accepted. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, to be honest, like, it's so different for each person. Some people, it's a death that happens in their family that shifts their whole perspective. Some people, it's plant medicine that is deemed so terrible that it could actually, like, bring about a shift in consciousness and create neurogenesis in the brain and new pathways for you to have a new lens on reality. I do think that we, not only are we shifting into a time of, you know, it's either artificial or natural. So, like, I think that there's going to be more movement towards, you know, for the mental wellness and for stress relief is coming into more of a plant medicine journey of, like, working with new plants that God gave us to work with.
But that's where medicine comes from anyway. It's such an irony that you look at any medicine, you look at any indigenous society, right? Where do they get their medicine from? The plants, the trees, the shrubs, the herbs, you know, the animals. I mean, the medicine's there, the rocks, the minerals, everything. Yeah. Everything you need. See, the earth is so wonderfully supplied with everything we need. You just have to recognize it. So Big Pharma comes along, you know, and takes all the stuff and totally screws around with it, puts it in a pill, colors it a different color, and makes you go see some person wearing a white coat, you know, in order to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas the local person down the shop, you know, in their shop down the way, that's wearing a tie-dye T-shirt, you know, with, you know, little blue sunglasses like John Lennon, you know, and they could know more than the doctor, because the doctor's giving you government medicine, you know, brought about by John D. Rockefeller oil money, you know, and as opposed to, you know, but people, they have no faith in themselves. They have no faith that they can be their own doctor. Okay. Now, I don't know, you know, I actually consented to a medical procedure to have open heart surgery to trim a valve so that it wouldn't, my heart wouldn't grow, you know, large and cause me all kinds of problems and die early. That to me made sense. But that's about the only thing I've let modern medicine do to me. You know, they've tried to give me drugs, they tried to give me all this other stuff. It's like, no, you know, thank you. I mean, yeah. I'm losing weight my own way. I'm starving. You know, I do the intermittent fasting thing. But they wanted to, you know, they got some blood meds and some thinners and water things, all this stuff. No. Stay away from me. Keep your damn pills.
Right.
and I feel 10 times better.
There's an herb or a plant for every symptom. And so it's like, you know, they treat us as if we're machines in a sense. And I think it's amazing for emergency medicine. Emergency medicine is profound. But this ease has so many facets that people like don't realize that it's not just a one size fits all. Like, yeah, you can be eating all the food, you can be moving the body, you can be drinking the things, you can be meditating, you can be doing all of this, but if you don't deal with the, you know, we'll say the trauma that has been stored in your body from childhood, you may never heal. There's I don't know if you've ever seen the Heal documentary on Netflix. I think it's on. But some of my teachers are on there, including Dr. Joe Dispenza, Dr. Darren Wiseman. And they, you know, God has come to them and shown them these new ways of being that heals not only from the physical level, but the emotional, mental, spiritual as well. And there was a woman on there.
Well, I just gonna say, you know, my next question is, do you know them and can you bring them on the show? As your guests.
I wish. They are
okay.
So popular.
Just curious.
Well, maybe Dr. Wiseman, he might, actually.
Okay. Right up.
Dr.
You know me. It's all
no.
Possibilities. Possibilities, not limitations. You know, all we can do is ask. So, you know, hey, you never know.
Yeah. I mean, I could reach out to him. We've connected a few times, not in person, but, I mean, the worst he could say is no.
Yeah, it's just a phone call. It's just us and, you know, the rest of the world listening. So it's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I will reach out to him. But it's just crazy because, like, there was a woman on there who she was, you know, she juiced every day, had a plant-based diet. She, you know, like she went to yoga and walked every day. She did all the things that you would think to do to keep you well, but she had stage 4 cancer. And so she started working with shamans and started working with, you know, holistic practitioners and energy workers. And she had stored trauma from 3 years old and 7 years old that she didn't know how to process that had stored
Everybody
in her
does.
Body. Well, she started doing this work. She healed the cancer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, chemo is, if I get cancer, chemo is not on my agenda at all. No, and it's interesting because I had a massive depression for about a couple of years. And at the end of it, or what caused the end of it, was I found out in the same week, and I mentioned this on the air before, it's not a big secret. I was told I had both skin cancer, I had a melanoma, and I needed open heart surgery to fix a valve in the same week. You know, I'm like, oh, this is interesting. You know, well, it cured my depression because I had things I had to take care of. But I can't, to this day, I don't know whether all the childhood trauma, all my lifetime traumas, all the things I've been doing wrong, you know, up until then was not causing the skin cancer and the heart problems. But I do know I went through a rebirth after that heart surgery and everything changed.
Yeah.
Everything changed. And I would not be able to, it's almost like I would not have been able to do Action Radio. I would not, without the depression and the resulting medical problems. I mean, you want to talk about going down the dark tunnel and coming out the other side? You know, this is where I am, why I am who I am today and can live fearlessly because I was dead for 4 hours on an operating table. Okay. You know, that's not an experience many people have. Okay. But coming back from that, you say, hey, thanks for the jump start. Really appreciate it. Now I can get to work. You know, it's a fascinating world. Yeah. But
and you may have had a walk-in consciousness. Like you may have had like what people would say, like a future consciousness. Part of your higher self, like, got to come back into the body to help you here.
Oh, yeah, I feel like, yeah, I definitely took on some more spirits. There's a lot of people in right now. Yeah, no, I absolutely feel that, yeah. I have to let you go just a little bit early because I haven't played any of the stuff I'm supposed to play. So I'm going to go over extended by a couple minutes. But I want you to give yourself a shameless plug. You're obviously coming back. I've already got texts, people that love you. So, you know, this is this is just the beginning of our conversations. So and then I'm going to post it real quick. So do that. And Paige, thank you so much. So turn over a new page, keep this, and I'll give you more jokes, you know, for next time.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for your time, Greg.
Well, aren't you going to mention, you know, where you are and where you're working and then things, you know, any of the health practitioner stuff and websites? And yeah, don't go away. You can't go away yet. You got to say that stuff. Then we'll pick
up
next
time. I am in a limbo. My website is being redone right now, and I start at a new wellness center August 1st. So right now I'm working virtually. And you can connect with me via Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, as I'm in the process of rebranding.
Okay.
And so, but all of that will be launched by August 1st, as I now have stepped through not just being a massage therapist.
Okay. Well, come back the week before you open or 2 weeks before you open, and we'll talk about that. I just have to let you go now because I have limited time and I got to play something. But thank you, Paige. We'll do it again soon. Okay.
Bye-bye.
See you later. You're right.
See you later.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com, srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio.
Okay, now we have to go. Greg Penglis for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, our legislative website, www.writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. I'll see you back tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Central Time.